It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Finally, some Macintosh rumors. We'll talk about the rumored new MacBook Pros. They're skinny. They're powerful. But where the heck is my FireWire? It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 299, recorded May 15th, 2012. Andy's Mutton Chops. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Try it free for 30 days at gotomeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the offer code MacBreak. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app for small business that saves time and gets you paid faster. Join over 3.5 million FreshBooks users and try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on MacBreak. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers Apple and Macintosh. And I'm going to introduce the panel, and I'm going to give you some very, very bad news. Andy Iannocco to my left from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial. And
just to make it clear that I'm not the bad news.
I'm going to introduce
the
some...
The fact that I'm on the show is like,
very
let's
bad
introduce
news.
The panel, hard break, and then there's some
very
bad
news.
Joining us today is Andy Iannocco. Just want to make that clear.
Very bad news.
Hi, how you doing?
Also, here is... This is weird. This is strange. Alex Lindsay is in town.
And I'm not the bad news either.
No, he's the good news. In town.
I'm in town. I'm in town today.
For a rare appearance.
Yes.
I really was preparing to write you off of MacBreak, not because I want to, because I love you, but because you work like out of town all the time now.
Yes, but no, but I'm
which is good.
I'm working on getting back in.
That's a good thing because you have a business that's thriving.
It's yeah.
Some people may or may not know. I think they know about PixelCore, but one of the things PixelCore does is video production, and you've got clients that are just got production all over the world now.
Yeah, we're doing 6 to 8 streams a week.
A week.
So I'm just one of the teams.
But can't you like teach other people to do what you
we
do?
Have? We have
because this is more important.
Exactly.
I know this doesn't. I know you only make $50 or whatever. But this is more important.
We have other teams. So there's actually about 6 teams that are doing stuff.
Good.
And so, but I'm one of them. And so there's certain events that I go to that are some of the high profile ones.
Isn't one of your spinoffs has a great Star Wars name?
Well, one of my other companies is Rebel Unit.
Rebel Unit.
Yeah.
I love that name.
So we
love that.
Yeah,
name.
Well, I was part of the, when I was at ILM, I was part of the Rebel Mac unit. So that was the name of
sense.
Our little division.
Oh, that's
so
cute.
So that's where it came from.
Also here from the Cult of Mac and the Cult of Android, Leander Connie. Hey,
hello.
he's a Mac person first and foremost.
First and foremost, right, absolutely.
Yeah. Great to have you, Leander.
Thank you for having me again, Leo.
So the bad news is this is Eileen's last day and last show that she's going to produce for Twit Network. And so that's really sad news. We love Eileen and she's going away. But it is an excuse to drink heavily. So that's not so bad.
When are we drinking? When is the goodbye
when is the,
party?
When is the
Where's
goodbye
the
party begin?
You know,
shortly
right
after this
the
show,
show
ends.
This is my last show behind the board. So, yeah, we'll be popping out that bottle of whiskey you asked Ayaz to put away. Behind me.
It's always bittersweet when employees leave. We've had employees, and I'm sure you have too, Leander and Alex. I know you have no employees out, Andy, so but I'm sure you can imagine. It's always sad when employees leave, but it's always bittersweet because it's also happy for them, and she's got a great new job. She's going to work for Molly Woods, Always On, which is going to be a very hot show for CBS. And so that's exciting. Are you the executive producer? What is your...
I'm the supervising...
The person in charge.
Producer, yeah.
You're doing all the work. Molly gets all the glory. That's how it works.
Well,
that's how it works
her
here.
Show. She is the star.
Maybe that's why she's leaving, actually. Come to think of it. Now I understand. I should have given her some glory.
You did. You gave me a show. I do.
Oh, that's right.
All About Android.
Let's not.
So.
That's. I always forget to mention. You're not leaving us entirely.
No.
You're going to continue to do All About Android every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. I never will get that time right because I don't know why anybody would work at 5 p.m. That's why.
you know, because it's a party at the end of the day is what we think.
It's the end of Monday.
We often get fed cupcakes and cake at the end of the show for whatever reason. So, yeah.
Well, anyway, we'll miss you. And
thank you.
Mostly,
I miss you guys too.
What's going to happen is people are going to miss the fabulous organization you brought to this. It's back to the old way, folks. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be fine. You did the show long before I ever came on.
So. Hey, good news. Mac news.
We have Mac news?
And, well, we knew this would happen. So Intel's Ivy Bridge, which is is it 22 nanometer? It's a new process version of Sandy Bridge that is going to be very good for notebooks. But now the Ivy Bridge processor is out. But the mobile part is not yet out, but we think it'll be out next month. And, of course, as a result, all sorts of announcements. Lenovo announced a bunch of new Ivy Bridge-based notebooks. It is absolutely going to be – I mean, this is speculation, but I think it's going to be the case that there will be new MacBooks, right?
We hope so.
If
these rumors are true –
is the speculation from 9 to 5 Mac that it will be ultra-thin – USB 3, which is, in my opinion, a bit of a capitulation from Apple. And most importantly, I think for most of us, a Retina display. They don't say what the resolution will be, but they're saying mind-boggling, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I mean, I think that it's hard to release a new laptop with USB 2. I mean, I think that would be...
Well, it is in the Windows world, certainly. But right. Thunderbolt, my friend, your favorite technology. What about it?
It's rumored that this one will have two of them, two Thunderbolt connections.
So it'll have,
which is huge, because one of the big things that we have trouble with is that we want to connect two end type Thunderbolts to our computers, and we can't do that. So which means that they only have one connector, and you don't want to really pass through. The Thunderbolt makes sense when you're passing from drive to drive, when you're passing real equipment to each other, like video interface boards and so on and so forth. Right. You don't really want to pass through them. So having two Thunderbolts on the other side, I think, make a big difference. I think that Thunderbolt is still – there's a lot of problems with USB when it comes to – there's no way to get video, you know, I.O. I mean, in the same way that Thunderbolt is set up for. I think Thunderbolt's a lot faster. It has less overhead.
Well, there's no question that Thunderbolt's better. You know, technically, but it hasn't been the adoption has not been huge.
Not in the consumer market.
It's very pricey, and Apple charges $50 for a cable, and nobody includes a cable. I mean, there's just all sorts of like negatives. USB 3 was kind of the Windows alternative that I say it's a capitulation only in that Apple tends to be purist, and I'm sure wants to promote Thunderbolt and say you don't need USB 3. Now the good news is with Ivy Bridge, USB 3 is free because it's built into the chipset.
Yep.
So that's probably why they're including it.
Yeah, I mean, this at this point for Apple, if they are including those processors, for Apple to deliberately leave USB 3 out of the device,
that would be
sort of
else.
Just being petulant and sort of being, right. Yeah, they don't want to give you USB 3.
And as we know, Apple is never petulant.
Exactly. their lower lip is always just fully out. They're never biting or anything like that.
No trembling.
But it also the 9 to 5 Mac report also says also theorizes that it's not going to have a built-in Ethernet port. And so if that is the case, then a high speed USB 3 Ethernet adapter is going to be pretty much required, because no one's going to spend $100 for a Thunderbolt solution for that, and no one's going to be satisfied with USB 2.0 speeds over Ethernet.
One thing I will say is I hope that they have a USB 2 connector, because there are compatibility issues. There are compatibility issues with USB 3. We ran into it yesterday at an event where devices aren't working with the USB 3. You plug it into the USB 2 and they're right as rain. So that's still there are some compatibility issues with USB 3 with some devices. And so hopefully they'll give us one of each.
Lander, what are you hearing about these rumors? Do they seem credible?
Oh, certainly, yeah, yeah. Everyone's got rumors. It was a lot of people were reporting this independently. ABC News, us.
Joanna Stern had the story at ABC News, right. But she didn't mention it Sunday when she was on Twit, Joanna. Nice to have a little scooplet.
The most interesting thing about the 9 to 5 Mac report was about the resolution of the display, the Retina display. There's been a lot of speculation that, you know, they would be doubling up the resolution of the current screen, just the way they've done with the iPad and the iPhone in the past. But they were going to it said in the report, which is and it was really strange, that Apple was going to drop actual numbers. They weren't going to refer to it as a 1080 by 768 screen anymore. The screen was going to be called, you know, good, better, best, and optimal, or something like that.
That's the resolution. So it was kind of resolution independent, was the idea.
Yeah, which I didn't quite get. Did you understand it?
No, I was going to ask you. It says, sources familiar with software strings, I'm reading the 9to5 story, left behind an OS X Lion and Mountain Lion betas say, this Retina display MacBook Pro features multiple Retina resolution modes, so users are able to adjust the sharpness and image sizes to their liking.
My
guess. The long-awaited resolution independence is upon us. What is that? Because there's an optimal resolution for every LCD screen. There's to match the dots, right?
Right. My guess is that one of the things that it may do is attempt to keep the perceived size of the text, the graphics, everything else the same when you change from resolution to resolution.
Perfect.
So instead of...
Got it.
So it gets sharper and sharper and sharper.
They change the PPI.
Right. But the scale of your text, that's a big problem. Like sometimes
it's a
you
huge problem. You get a super high res screen, all of a sudden all the icons and text are little teeny weeny.
Right.
So if
if
there were consistent text and icon size, and you're just making it clearer or less clear.
And then you're deciding on your own whether you want to zoom in or zoom out.
But why would you choose less clear if it's all the same size?
It might be because you're interfacing with an external video device that can't work at the same resolution. So if you're going to hook it to a 720p device or a 1080p device, that, you know, it's funny to say 1080p will be lower resolution, half the resolution of your laptop. But you might have to, if you're going to mirror those, you might have to go to a lower resolution to make that work. That's my, and I'm completely making this up on the fly, just in case anyone's wondering.
That's good though, Alex.
Yes.
That sounds reasonable.
That's one area that I don't really understand. I mean, having a retina grade resolution is a really big thing when you've got a phone, when you've got an iPad, something that's going to be like a held close to your face sort of device, because it's absolutely unmistakable. And I'm switching back and forth between the new iPad and the iPad 2 for a project, and for the first time in my life, the iPad 2 looks like it's got crummy resolution.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it so closely, but when I'm working with an iMac, when I'm working with a 15-inch notebook, it's far enough away that it takes a good look to see exactly what display resolution I'm actually in. So long as I've got the screen, what matters isn't actual resolution, but screen real estate. There's a certain minimum that my, you know, because I'm equipped with human eyes, I'm really not going to see the difference between this display that cost me an extra $200, the one that cost me a little bit less money.
Yeah, you're running at arm's length with a monitor. And traditionally, higher resolution has always meant exactly that. Andy, yeah. More tabletop, more desktop, so you can get more pages on there. It hasn't meant crisper because it's already Retina at that distance. You don't see dots at that distance, right?
Well, I mean, I think
isn't that what Retina means? But, is that you cannot resolve the pixels at the normal viewing distance?
But the normal viewing distance of my laptop right now, I can see the pixels. I mean, when I'm looking at this, I mean, you know,
really?
I can definitely see that they're especially around curves. You can see, you know, the thing, that's where you're going to see it. You're not going to see it through the straight lines, but, you know, you can see. And the thing is, I think that what's going to happen, like what happened with the iPad, is that as soon as we see a Retina display on a laptop, we're going to look at everything else and feel like it looks low resolution.
So admittedly, that's what you won't see. I don't think you'll see pixelation or artifacting.
But everything's going to look
sharper. But everything will look crisper. That's what we've seen with the iPad 2.
But the big question is everything going to work?
Right.
Because that's resolution independence is a much, much bigger deal on macOS than than the mobile operating system. And secondly, I mean, everybody at this table has spent enough time giving a talk to like 500 people, and you've got exactly 6 minutes to put your laptop down on a podium and get it to work with whatever projector the Radisson
good luck.
Put in there.
Yeah.
And so, man alive, that's the point where I really want to be able to say, here is the actual pixel resolution of this screen, because the tech guy in the room is telling me, here's what you should set it at. I'm not going to tell him, well, should I set it at medium best resolution or optimum resolution? Oh, no, wait. There's another setting here called wonderful. Should it be a wonderful resolution?
This is somebody in the chat room pointed out, this is Apple, the new dumbing down, right? It's good, better, best. You don't need to know the dots.
I bet you that. I'd be highly surprised if there isn't some kind of advanced setting that lets you just put in, this is, you know, select the resolutions that we have. I think that
so what
that'd be kind of insane.
What by the way, a lot of these rumors come from what Ivy Bridge is capable of. I mean,
right.
I think that's really what's happening, is people saying, well, there will be an Ivy Bridge notebook. Here's what it's capable of. And one of the things, it does have a much better built-in GPU. And you couldn't do screen resolutions on a laptop with the GPUs that they had.
Right.
Up to now. I think also this, but what's confusing, and this is maybe one of those Apple things, like, oh, we're going to do something different, is this notion of independence. Like, but I think we got, nailed it, which is that the DPI will be adjusted, the pixels per inch will be adjusted, and what they've obviously got, and I don't see that here, but I bet you they have, is a really good scaler in Ivy Bridge,
right?
That will do the upscaling. The problem in the past, I remember in the earliest days of digital displays, if you didn't display at the exact right really resolution, soft. It was really awful.
Well, and it's still soft. I mean, if you go to an odd resolution on your laptop, you're going to see.
But it did get better, and I think it got better because of scalers built into these, I would guess, built into these screens where, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what happens in high-def television, where it can upscale and match the resolution you want and do artifacting or whatever it's doing to make it look better. Maybe they've got better scalers in here so they can say, hey, you don't have to think about resolution. Yes, there is a native resolution on this display, which is very, very high,
right.
But you get to pick what you want, and it's going to look almost as good no matter what.
And I think for the average, I mean, again, for us, we're like, we need to have a specific resolution. But I think for my parents, just them just knowing that it was going to sharp or, you know, like good, better, best is really all they need to know.
But shouldn't there be higher expectations for a machine that costs $1,500? In the Windows space, I love the fact that there is a $650 laptop and there's a $715 desktop, that there are some trade-offs involved, but I'm not saying you're settling for less because of the price, but you feel as though you don't have to expect the moon from this thing. Apple sells nothing but super premium product. That's if the 15-inch notebook is going to be like the machine that it replaces, it's going to start at about $1,500 and go above $2,000. Okay. For that amount of money, I have a right to expect an Ethernet jack. I have a right to expect everything. I mean, just in that trip to Dublin at that conference, another speaker traveled with his MacBook Air, and he thought that the hotel Wi-Fi was going to work. It didn't. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he had internet access for the whole week was due to the fact that I happened to have brought with me an Airport Express. Without that, he would have been stuck to a trip to the Apple store for $30 for a adapter he probably already has. For $1,500, for $2,000, I shouldn't have to go to the Apple store for another $35 adapter for a basic thing that every single Windows notebook that costs more than $350 has built in.
I think we're going to see, it's interesting because we are seeing already the Lenovo does not have, the new Lenovo they announced today does not have an Ethernet port. And I think that might be an Ivy Bridge issue. I don't know. But, of course, Apple's Airs come with a Ethernet, USB to Ethernet adapter.
Yeah, we have.
And also, at least with the Airs, at least you feel as though you're getting something in exchange for the lack of ports. You're getting a really, really nice light, really, really super slim display. You're also getting a MacBook cost $999, which by Mac terms is really, really cheap. Right. And also,
I think you're right, Andy. I think people want an Ethernet port. But if you get this thin, you know, it's a form factor issue. The Ethernet port already
doesn't fit.
Goes right from the top to the bottom of the Air, of the MacBook. So you make this any thinner, there's no room.
Well, and the thing that we run into over and over and over again now is that we're dealing with people's connection issues all over the world.
I note that, by the way, the FireWire is the same.
FireWire is gone.
I think FireWire is gone.
It's gone. It'll be gone. But we deal with people's connections.
Go ahead. Keep talking.
We deal with.
Can I just hold this up to the close-up camera so people can see how close the tolerances are now? And if you get any thinner, you're going to be out of luck.
Give me one second.
Yeah, go ahead and get the close-up shot ready.
But the thing is that we deal with people's connections all over the world, and one of the things we find over and over and over again is there's a lot of people now, I mean, probably 60 to 70% of the people that we have, they don't even know where their Ethernet ports are, like in the house. I mean, they're using Wi-Fi, they're using, you know, so we expect that, but
Lenovo's doing, they're offering a USB 3 dock, that if you need that. Now, Apple never will do a dock. I mean, they've learned their lesson from the Duo.
The big difference here is, though, remember that Lenovo is just one manufacturer of many that makes Windows machines. If I really want a machine that has an Ethernet port, I can certainly go out and find it.
Right.
Apple is the only purveyor of Macintosh notebooks. And if they realize that we're all going on conjecture on what 95 Mac seems to think the design of the new 15-inch MacBook Pro is going to be, but if Apple suddenly says, nope, we're not going to sell any mobile Macs that have a built-in Ethernet port, we're not going to sell any mobile Macs that have feature A, feature B, feature C, suddenly you're saying, if it's only 10% of the people out there who want a hardwired Ethernet port, why are you zorching out 10% of the power users who define the use of this machine?
But I think, I mean, it's, I think it's,
I think Apple would have to go really make a hard turn to the opposite direction and say, we are explicitly saying we are a consumer electronics company. We realize that there's a market for high pro-end machines, but we are no longer interested in that market.
Go ahead, Leonard.
That's exactly the point, though, I think, isn't it? They're making consumer machines. They are not targeting, although I guess, you know, they want to have the biggest market possible. And I know in the past when they've dropped ports, I think Phil Schiller came out and said that they looked at the numbers and only, you know, 10% of users were using this port. So to them, it made no sense to accommodate that 10%. And I think something like a dongle is a good compromise.
And when I'm trying to think of what Apple's going to do next on a lot of things, I think 90-90. What will 90% of the people need 90% of the time?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't fit into that I think it's highly unlikely that Apple, I mean, I think that is the direction Apple's going, whether we like it or not, as power users. But I think that when we think about the direction of that, I mean, they're going to look at what 90% of the people want to do 90% of the time. And if it doesn't fit into that, you know, and I think that we're very quickly seeing hardline connections to computers, not something that is impossible, but something that we're going to give you an extra dongle to manage because, you know, this is not what most people are going to do. We're not going to build an entire chassis, an entire workflow, and build the entire computer for something that a small percentage of people are going to use. We're not taking it away. We're simply saying that if you want to be one of those special people, that you're going to need a dongle.
The same argument can be made for the iPad, right? They could make a pro iPad that had all these different connections in it. And there's no way they're going to do that because they're looking for the one device that fits most people's uses.
Can I just say, though, don't we all really, really want this?
Oh, yeah.
Are we going to really say, no, I'm not buying it. It has no Ethernet port. No, I want it. It's beautiful. If it's that thin, with a Retina display.
And USB 3 and two Thunderbolts.
Could be missing a keyboard and I would buy. Well, that's an iPad.
I just don't want to. In my imagination, I'm plotting the curve out beyond the next 2 months.
Right.
And every time you say, we're going to take 90% off, 90% off, 90% off, 90% off. Each time you're leaving behind 10% of the functions of a machine. But pretty soon you're left to a machine that's worth about zero.
Right.
And we could, and it's, again, as I plot the curve out into hyperspace, I can really see a time when, again, 2 years from now, when a year or two from now, when I need to buy a new notebook, and I have to say, well, here's what Apple's willing to sell. Apple is selling a machine that's good for 60, 70, 80% of the people out there. Unfortunately, I've got basic day-to-day needs this design does not serve. And because Apple's the only company that's making these computers, I have to switch to Windows now. And Windows 8 is a very good, again, plotting out in the future, Windows 8 is a very good, very stable operating system that's very, very useful, very, very secure. And the fact that I can actually get the machine that I want, and I feel as though there's a company out there who cares about every user out there and not simply say, oh, well, you're an edge case, screw you.
But I don't think I know
it's already happened. It's already happening to me because I am actually now, whenever I look at an Ultrabook, not for when I test it with Linux. I want to see, can I run Linux on this thing?
Linux.
Linux, because I'm not going to go from a Mac to a Windows machine, but I would go from a Mac to a Linux machine. I want to have a Unix operating system under the hood.
Are you guys all nuts? You know, to be honest, I'm looking at my MacBook Pro and I'm thinking this is probably the last
notebook.
Notebook I'm going to buy.
That may be the case.
I'm moving to the iPad. I want to move everything to the iPad.
That may be the case, yeah. I mean, if you want proprietary computing, there's nothing that beats the iPad. And Apple's moving, basically, Andy, that's what's happening. Apple's moving you into a proprietary computing sphere.
Well, and I think that
not opening computing. Get rid of the ports.
iPad is tailor-made to be as thin as possible, as light as possible, and as inexpensive as possible. So I'm getting something in return for giving up ports. Again, if you're trying to get $1,500, $2,000 out of me, the answer to the question, why doesn't have this feature, isn't, oh, screw you, you're an edge case. It's, no, I can give you the names of 100 people that I know. That's a really if you're telling me because our design aesthetic says that, ooh, we want things that are a little bit slimmer. Well, slimmer does not make – it doesn't mean that this thing now floats and it hovers behind me like a balloon. I still have to carry this 15-inch notebook. Yes? Yes. So why are you making it slimmer just for the point of making it slimmer if the cost of that is that you're making it less useful? Talk about the 10%. This is the 10% of Apple that absolutely drives me nuts time and time and time again.
Well, I know, but it's a given.
purely aesthetic and style decision that absolutely makes a product worse.
And Andy, it's a given. Welcome to the Apple world.
I think that Apple constantly focuses on. I mean, I think there is a high value at Apple for being able to say no to things. I mean, they say no to things all the time. They're constantly shaving off
Ethernet.
Edges.
No, but
what I'm saying is that there are I've heard stories of them spending $100 million on development of a product that never comes out because they decide at the very end, this isn't the right time for it or this isn't the right whatever. I mean, they say no to a lot of stuff. And what they're saying no to is that this isn't something we want to continue to engineer for, as part of the device. And I have to say, as a power user, and I think I fit into the power user group. I mean, a 17-inch laptop is about the minimum that I can use. I usually carry two of them with me. That what they've added, theoretically, if that's what they've added, is more than enough for me as a power user. Two Thunderbolt connections and a USB 3. You know, the thing is I think as a power user, I might quibble over the Ethernet, but I'll buy that thing in a heartbeat. I'll buy two of them in a heartbeat. You know, the thing is that it is, and so I think that they are still satisfying what power users want. Maybe not.
They're aiming at the broad middle. It's a bell curve. Some power users are going to fall off the side.
No power users. I mean, here's the deal.
I disagree. Somebody's going to want Ethernet. Somebody's going to, you know, I mean.
I know, but are they really going to go to Windows over Ethernet? I mean, the thing is that, yeah.
Not just Ethernet, but when you combine price, Ethernet, other functionality that Apple may be stripping out, it's what Andy's point is, I think, is very well made, is it snowballs.
I guess the question is,
who are
the power users? Because the thing is that if the power users are video producers, which is a large portion of the power users of Macs. I don't know who else needs a big machine. When I work at a facility and I show up at facilities and I show up at a lot of them every week, you don't see
they're
PCs.
All using
you don't
Macs.
See PCs anywhere.
They're
I
all
mean, it,
Macs,
you know, it,
know.
It has died off. I mean, there's a handful of them. Every time you see them, you're like, wow, they've got a PC here. How do they use that? You know, like it's like, you know, and how do they integrate equipment with it? And the thing is that
that's pretty funny, really.
Oh yeah, you look at it like, what am I supposed to do?
How
with
do
this?
I get
you
Windows know? To work with this?
Oh no, I had a.
That's
very
kind of,
recently.
That's
like,
a bizarre transition.
You look at it like, what am I supposed to do with this? Like, I have this video hardware, and I don't even know how to connect it. Like, I'm trying to show someone how to connect something to a video recorder. I'm like, I don't know how to do this with a PC. You know, and so it's, you know, you never see it anymore. You know, in these broadcast facilities, you almost never see it in the airport. I mean, now in the airport, it used to be, you know,
you see a lot of iPads.
You could walk
now.
Over and say hi to someone who had a Mac because there was like the two of you. Now it's like you see like a handful of Asus and Dell machines every once in a while.
That's totally not my experience. I'm in airports and the MacBooks are easier to spot, but I see nothing but Dells. I see nothing but Asus. When I'm in coffee shops, when I'm in colleges, I'm seeing lots of Apples, but I'm very, very much aware that in the desktop and the laptop market, it's really, really owned by Windows at this point.
Interesting.
I think it's just
West Coast, East Coast thing, because on the West Coast, we just...
Yeah, the coffee shops around here in San Francisco, I know this is not typical, but It's all MacBooks and iPads. And
yeah, we're in a bubble
iPads.
Here.
Yeah, it's definitely not. But this is a lot of A players. The cream of the crop, the programmers, the designers, the Silicon Valley elite, and the iPads that are coming in. I mean, I'm seeing more and more iPads.
I mean, we work for a lot of corporate clients, and we were actually told, we were shooting some behind the scenes videos, and we were told, do not shoot. And this is these are big corporate clients. We've been told by two different clients, do not shoot anyone working on a PC.
Have a deal with Apple? What?
No, they didn't have a deal. They felt
we just don't want to look on hip.
Marketing felt like PCs make them look backwards.
Well, then now you're explaining why you never see PCs anymore. It's because they're being hidden.
Right.
Because marketing says, well, that's unhip. Well,
but and all of the marketing guys all have, you know, Macs.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and,
I don't think know, that's too bad. So, but that's a shame that they're driving.
But they're like, you know, we don't want people to see the other ones because and they have partnerships with some of those companies.
And you wonder why people hate Mac users. Holy cow.
But it's a very, you know...
They're just computers, kids. There really isn't that much difference. Yeah. And if you need an Ethernet port and you want to spend half as much, I think look at these new Lenovos. They're carbon fiber. They're thin. There's a lot to be said for these things. I'll get one in here and you guys look at it and you tell me. In fact, I got the Dell over there. Is anybody in my office? I'll show you the Dell.
Maybe
it looks gorgeous. And it's, you know, I just think that... Apple's going after the fat middle more and more.
Which is really funny that Apple's going to
the fat middle. Isn't that ironic?
Because they went from being the 3% to the fat middle.
Yeah. This is clearly, and Dell and HP and everybody say, no, we had designs like this before. This is clearly a MacBook Air, right? I mean, except it has a plastic, actually this is carbon fiber bottom. But you know, look at the keyboard, very much influenced by the air backlit. One thing that they've done differently is that this is a 13-inch in a form factor that's much smaller than the Apple 13.
Is this camera any better than the old Dells?
Probably not, but who knows? You know what? Even the Mac camera isn't as good as the C910.
Oh, no. But the Dells, if I get on a webcam with someone now, if they look like they're 1950, you know, I know that they're using a Dell camera.
That's nice. This is Gorilla Glass. It's almost edge to edge. I'll turn it on if I can, but it is almost edge to edge. So it really feels like a nice big screen. And now, by the way, no Ethernet port. So I don't know if this is a win. It does have, what's interesting is DisplayPort.
And is it display? Oh, it's not Thunderbolt. It's just
not Thunderbolt. It's mini DisplayPort. It does have a USB 3 on it. Maybe the battery.
And then I think I've used a bunch of Lenovo's, and those are great.
Those new Lenovo's they'd announced today. Look, anyway, this is Mac Break Weekly. Yeah. But I think this is to defend Andy's point, which is it gets harder and harder.
All I'm saying is that Apple has the ability to define the entire universe of an entire desktop platform. That if they keep going for the middle of that bubble and they apply that to every single machine that they make, I get asked all the time, I need a notebook, what should I get? I'm thinking of switching from this to this for a desktop. I don't want to go back. What I'm saying is that I'm not really criticizing Apple so much as I'm saying I don't want to go back to those dark times 10 or 15 years ago when I had to tell people that, well, Macs are nice, but they really don't do everything, and you might find yourself in a situation in which you really, really wish you'd bought a PC or something that was a little bit more capable, because Apple really isn't making flexible machines that are good for pretty much anybody in any situation. They're built for people who really just want to do the web, just want to do Microsoft Office, want to send some email, funny snapshots to the grandkids. If you want to do more than that, ooh, save yourself $800 and buy something from Asus. I don't want to ever be in that position, whether it's next year or 2015 or 2020. And that's, again, as I keep plotting that curve out, I see that as one of the possible names on the gravestone that Scrooge sees from the Christmas.
And I think that might be possible, but my only argument will be is that the machine that is rumored. Remember, we're just talking about a rumor here. But the machine that's rumored right now, there is going to be no production mobile production platform that is better than that machine. I mean, two Thunderbolt cables, a USB 3 cable, a USB 2 cable. You know, that machine with a Retina display. There's not going to be anything on the market that comes. So we can look at the trajectory, and maybe it doesn't have an Ethernet cable, maybe it doesn't have FireWire, but there is going to be. I mean, every production person who needs a real machine in the field is going to be using that machine if it comes out as spec'd in that rumor.
Well, anyway,
it's incredible.
Whatever. Sorry, what's true is that this new MacBook looks beautiful, and we will all have one within a month of its release because it's gorgeous. And maybe we'll bitch about the lack of an Ethernet port or something, but we're all going to want one. You know, more of FireWire is more of an issue for me than Ethernet.
I'm concerned about the FireWire, but I, you know, USB 3 solves a lot of that because a lot of the machines. You know, I won't be able to hook my cameras in anymore, but that's...
Yeah, I mean, this is more of an issue in the long run to me, but that's, you know...
And it's hard to say that Apple should have three different high-speed data connectors on the same frame. So.
They have to cut the cord, just as they did with SCSI, leaving us with a bunch of useless drives. They're going to do with FireWire, leaving us with a bunch of useless drives. You know, actually, most drives now have USB. So if it had...
A lot of them have USB 3.
If it had fast USB.
And actually, the reality is a lot of these great little drives that are cheap all are USB 3, and we can't use them because they're not, you know, because we don't have a machine.
We're going to take a break, come back with more. There is a new update to OS 10. We'll talk about it. It's a security update that's fairly significant. But first, we're going to talk about GoToMeeting with HD Faces, which now works on your iPad, and I love it. Shoot, I left my iPad at home. I was going to do a meeting on the show today. Next time. Because I want you to see how beautiful the HD Face. We did a GoToMeeting yesterday, and it was great. I think, one, two, three. We had seven or eight people in there. You get up to 16 in the video, and for some reason it formed a pyramid, and I was at the top, and I like that.
That's the key.
I have a screenshot of that. I will share that with you. GoToMeeting. Now, you all know about GoToMeeting. I'm sure it's the great online meeting software. Makes it very easy to set up a meeting with just a click of a mouse. Makes it very easy to join a meeting. And in fact, it's got built-in audio and video. You can use a conference. They have a you know, teleconferencing system as well. But for nowadays, for most people, just putting on the headphones and using the mic on the computer, that's great. It has video as well as the best screen sharing. So you've really got everything you need to make a meeting personal, real, as good as meeting in person. Go to Meeting with HD Faces. You can collaborate on files and plans online. All you need to do is turn on that webcam and suddenly you're seeing people and seeing what they look like and seeing their expressions, getting to know them better. And now I just think this is so cool. We all had the iPads. We did not. The meeting organizer still has to be on a Mac or a PC. But in fact, I think you watch, because Citrix is always advancing it. It's only a matter of time before you can start a meeting on your Mac. I mean, on your iPad. But so the organizer was on a Mac, and then we had seven of us in the room on iPads, and with the iPad camera, and it is so cool to be in a meeting on the go with an iPad. You can also do it with your iPhone. It's not video, but it's you can see the video, but you can't send the video. That I'm sure they'll also add. It's, you know what's also cool about GoToMeeting? You get all these enhancements automatically, free. It's just part of the deal. When you start a meeting, suddenly, oh, wow, I could do this now. Go to the website. Visit the website right now. GoToMeeting.com. Take a look at it. Browse around. And then if you decide you want to try it free for 30 days, a month of unlimited meetings, click the Try It Free button. The offer code is MacBreak. MacBreak. GoToMeeting.com. Try It Free button and the offer code MacBreak for 30 days free. Do then download the free client on the iPad and try it. I apologize. Next week, I'll remember to bring my iPad and we'll set it up and we'll show you. It's pretty darn cool, I got to say. GoToMeeting.com, offer code MacBreak. Please run software update if you haven't got that update and get to, what is it, 10.4.8. Is that right? 10.4. No, I'm sorry. I'm dyslexic. 10.7.4. That's the new one. 10.7.
You were closer, though.
I wasn't even close. I wasn't even close to being close. 10.7.4 fixes a number of bugs. Also has a removal tool for that Trojan, the flashback Trojan. Kind of a must-have. Just this public service announcement brought to you by me. 10.7.4 is out. Came out a couple of days ago. This is a weird rumor. I'm not even sure. Maybe I'll ask Leander, because you have to deal with this. Apple Insider says that Apple is in talks to acquire the German television maker Loewe. I think it's Loewe. L-O-E-W-E. Loewe says, nothing to it. Absolutely nothing to it. They even had a price, $113 million bid to buy Loewe, which would absolutely confirm this ITV rumor. Yes? No? Maybe?
I have no insight into what they heard. It seems a little strange. I think the problem with the Apple TV from Apple's point of view is the content and the software and, you know, making a platform, not and even maybe even the retail distribution. You know, I mean, I think there are reasons to think they're going to do it. There are reasons they're not going to do it. And, you know, acquiring another high-end TV maker, I don't know if they need that. I mean, they don't need the manufacturing expertise. I don't think they need the design expertise. They look like nice TVs. I checked out the German company's website, and it looks like they're really nice looking products. And but I don't see what Apple would get from that. I really don't. You know, I think the problem with the TV right now is content, and they things are changing rapidly. There were a couple of stories in the last couple of days in the New York Times about how there's a huge demographic shift now in people's viewing patterns. People are no longer turning to the network TV any longer. Everything is coming, you know, through the web or on demand. And I know that's certainly true in my household. You know, my kids don't watch live TV at all and haven't done for years.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the question for the Apple TV really is getting all the content partnerships lined up and taking care of things like live sports. I think sports are probably the most difficult thing they face. It's not, you know, getting nice hardware. It's not getting a retail channel. It's not, you know, having, you know, getting into people's living rooms. It's the content. I don't know. Yeah, it's a strange rumor.
It is. And it follows on the heel of another bad rumor, which is the chairman at Foxconn saying, "Yeah, we're gearing up to make an ITV." Like, what?
Yeah, that was I think misreported. I
mean, it had to be. There's no way he said that.
No, none at all.
But I have to say, I think I've now, having gone to this Leuven site, I know the genesis of this. Leuven started the rumor to get all us Mac people over here because these are gorgeous.
They look pretty new.
I want one.
So, yeah, that was it.
Yeah, I think
good
they
marketing.
Started the well rumor. Done. They said, hey, plant this rumor because then all of these people will come and say, well, what's Leuven? And they'll go, ooh, these are, this is what an Apple TV should look like. It looks like a an iMac.
It's a lot of real estate at the bottom of it. For
yeah,
nothing.
I don't like that. It's 50. That's a 52-inch display.
I'm kind of not used to that.
They also do. They do the speakers. They do all of this stuff. So they have a big. Range of products. Leuven does, and I think this is totally Leuven saying, "Come on, your Apple people should come look at our site because it's beautiful." He's beautiful.
Looks like they have an iPad app too. Looks like they some of the TVs are controlled by an iPad app, which plays through AirPlay.
Okay, I think we got to the bottom.
Good marketing.
Good marketing. That is good marketing.
Apple's not going to buy anybody to do
by
that.
By the way, I want to float a rumor that Apple is about to buy Twit.
You'll see it in the news tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, really, that's good marketing.
I'm sorry, Leo, but I have to recuse myself from the discussion about any rumors about Apple buying Twit, because I may or may not have access to software. Oop.
That, you saw Wag the Dog, right? That's what they did in Wag the Dog to plant these, you know, rumors. They say, I know, you know, there's absolutely no truth to the fact that Lockheed is making a B-3 bomber. And that's how you plant the rumor. So I'm just going to say right now, I will categorically deny it. Apple is not making a bid to buy Twit for $130 million. I will categorically deny that. Foxconn says our CEO absolutely did not confirm an Apple TV. That's not true. Terry Gao apparently saying the company's making preparations for ITV. Foxconn saying no. In fact, Terry's smart. This is one of the smartest guys in the world. This guy created Foxconn out of nothing. $1.50. And he's not going to screw his number one customer.
Yeah, because I'm sure that working as closely as he does with Apple, he knows that Apple doesn't really care. I mean, it's really fine for you to just say whatever you need to say.
Yeah, Apple won't do anything.
It just takes the pressure off of them to maintain the surprise for June or July.
Yeah, exactly.
You know how much it costs money to rent a hall, to get the catering done, to rent the projector. Better yet, just have a parts supplier announce it for you, low key. Few pizza bites, maybe.
That's a great way to leak it. Leander had the story, we talked about it last week, that says our source has seen an Apple HDTV. You want to tell us any more about that?
Yeah, it was a prototype. And the thing with this source is they see a lot of stuff in the prototype stage. And so, you know, they don't have 100% record. A couple of things that they've given us in the past didn't come to pass, or haven't yet come to pass, I'm hoping. I'm hoping they're still in the pipe. But they said they saw a prototype TV. They couldn't give me the precise specs, but it was big. It looked just like a cinema display, which looked like the current round of IMAX, edge-to-edge screen. It had a really nice FaceTime camera that could zoom in right across the room and follow your face.
Oh, so that sounds good.
Right, so you could do it from your couch. You didn't have to stand in front of the screen like I'm doing now to make a FaceTime call. You could move around and it would follow you around the room. And it was Siri activated. The call was made using Siri.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, don't know if Siri was the main interface for the device or whether it was just used for FaceTime calls. But it was really intriguing. You know, it goes to show, I think, it's, you know, the TV is becoming much more of a two-way medium and not something you just sort of sit passively in front of anymore. And it's going to bring, you know, FaceTime video communications to the living room. I'd be interested to see also whether, you know, it brings in sort of full Siri-like capabilities.
You know,
it'd be great if they...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It was, you know, just intriguing. Obviously, a lot of the details missing, but...
What intrigues me, now that I think more about it, is that if you are indeed in a post-PC world, you're going to put PCs in appliances that are in your life, and a TV is a very natural next step. First, you have the iPad, but the iPad is a different experience than the TV experience. So maybe put that iPad-like capabilities in a TV, but you have to consider that it's across the room, that the interface, you're not touching it. So that you have to consider all of that. It doesn't, contextualized that way, it doesn't seem such a distant step for Apple. If you're getting out of the PC, out of the computer business, well, where do you put that knowledge, that intelligence, your expertise? You put it in a tablet, and maybe you put in a TV next.
Well, I think that you look at what a lot of people are doing a lot of the time, and the thing is that there are a lot of people that don't need anything more than what they need more than what the Apple TV does. I'll argue, but not more than what the iPad does.
Right, TV to the iPad, you've got a great twosome, and you don't need a desktop or laptop.
And when we look at the Apple TV, I mean, obviously the Apple TV is an iPad core. You know, I mean, it could do anything an iPad can do. They're just limiting it. I mean, you know, they could open that up to applications or anything else that they wanted to at any point in time.
Well, if you had this thing in your living room on the wall, it would be almost like your classic Star Trek computer.
Right.
You know, where you could tell it to set up your appointments and who do you have appointments with and what have you got going on in your calendar for the day and fielding calls and all kinds of, you know, arranging your life. I think, like you say, Leo, it's a new computing experience, completely new.
And it would make sense. I'm coming around. I've been very negative on the idea that Apple might do this, but I'm kind of coming around. If you throw away PCs, well, where do you put that capability? What do you put it into?
Wired had a fascinating story. Christina Bonington, their reporter, got to see a prototype television that was the size of a wall. It was actually made up of six panels.
Yeah.
But it was much more interactive. So while they were showing a sports game, they had everything, all the Twitter feed from your friends, your Facebook friends, what they were up to, what they were watching. You could comment and you know, interact with what you were watching as much as, you know, just sort of taking it in. It was very, very much a two-way system.
I can see a world. And remember, technologists, Steve Jobs certainly, but all technologists are very influenced by science fiction. You know, even scientists get inspired to do the work of their life based on something they read when they were 15 in science fiction. So I could very much see, I think of Ray Bradbury's The Veldt. Remember that, where he had a full wall screen? It was, I could very much see a world where you don't have a computer per se. You have a big screen in your home, which you clearly you're not interacting with a keyboard. You're using your voice, and you have a little screen so that you can leave home. I could see a world where that's where computing is in the house, in the family. And that world is only, I think, a few years off.
I just want to point out that story didn't turn out very well for the parents.
The Veldt was bad because they got eaten by lions. It became a little too real. But, you know, but seriously, don't you think that idea of a wall that is a window to the world, it's very high resolution, maybe not a full wall, but a large screen that you interact with?
Of course, 1984, too. It's actually quite an old vision of
sure. That's what that's kind of my point, is that modern technologists are influenced by those Tom Swift stories, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, you know, a few years ago, the idea of the Dick Tracy watch making video conference calls seemed outlandish. It was a future that was a long way away. And now, of course, it's completely commonplace.
Now there's a guy with a nano embedded in his body.
Yeah, right.
But that's actually good. And that's a good illustration. Usually the science fiction can only visualize the future in terms of what the present is. Everybody was thinking, oh, what's going to be the future communication device? Well, it's going to be a telephone inside a wristwatch that has a television inside it. And yet, this has never been an era in which, like, more people, even more nerds, are wearing, like, just plain old analog watches, because the future of wearable computing was this tiny little pad, little thing that everybody has in their shirt pockets.
Yeah, wait till I get my Pebble, though. Then you'll want one.
I think that we are moving towards this world where we're not going to have keyboards, and we're not going to have this section here, and we're going to have, you know, I think that we're, because I don't, you know, I think that that was what was necessary at that moment, but I think that this kind of...
Keyboards are 19th century technology, maybe 20th, but they're old. Yeah, but
they organized in a way to slow us down.
They do work, as does the mouse, but it is old. I mean, it's possible to do better, I would hope.
Wheels are old, but, you know, we're not using diamond shaped wheels on our sport utility vehicles, are we?
But think about, I mean, every science fiction story has a computer you could talk to.
And you know, Andy, that once the wheels go away in one car, they'll be gone in all of them in like a decade.
Well, as soon as we can float.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as we have levitation down, it's going to be over.
It'll happen not because the new wheels are new, but because they solve a problem that, unbeknownst to anybody else, people have actually been worrying about for the past 10 or 15 years.
Bumps.
And there's also the. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Bumps.
Bump, right. Potholes. But we live in the pothole capital of America, by the way, here in Petaluma.
Holy smokes.
Well, we in Boston, we filled that too near Sturrow Drive, so that's how we lost the crown. But hey, winter refreezes are going to be happening this year. We'll get that crown back. But there are a whole bunch of technologies I think that only will work once a lot of people die. And I'm not talking about armed phaser cannons killing people who are not going to be early adopters, but I'm talking about there's a whole generation that are just not going to get their heads around a certain basic concept, including folks like me who always define a computer as something that could conceivably do what I wanted to do 2 years from now, not just the stuff that I wanted to do today. And so maybe I am one of those people that my generation has to sort of go into the deep, deep, deep background before the absolute unimaginable by me generation of computers can actually happen. For now, I'm wondering, do people really, really, is society really interested in a TV computer? And the answer to that is they will be as soon as someone cracks this problem. But it's not going to be as simple as simply saying, let's write iPad apps for the screen. If Apple has a big success with this, it's going to be because they really did crack it. They found a problem that we didn't even know that we were dealing with until we found the solution dropped in our laps.
But I think we all know that there's a problem with the TV right now, because we have a controller that I have to swap from the TV to the internet to my Apple TV. And we all know that, you know, and the question that I have is that one of the ways to crack the content problem is if CBS and does CNN and do HBO get to have their own apps running on, you know, running on this Apple TV.
Right.
So rather than just Netflix, you know, this gets back to the a la carte method, which is that each of them can run their own video apps, and that it's their own little world. And it's no longer, you know, what flicking the channels is watching, looking at all those little cubes that, you know, are organized by, you know, different networks, and letting the networks, in some ways, that gives networks an enormous amount of control. It does completely, dismember the Comcast, you know, cable play. But,
well, and that's why it's going to go hard, because these guys, these incumbents, are not going to go down without a big fight.
But that's another part of the problem, that if you approach somebody who's very, very aware, very, very well aware of where their audience is and where their revenue comes from, and you say that I want you to ignore the 92.8% of the pie chart that says people are getting your programming through cable TV. I want you to sort of attack that to widen this one little sliver of people who can afford the $500 device that makes this all happen.
No,
people
who
can afford the $2,000 device.
But I think the good
companies will see the importance of, you know, making sure that you're a good company 5 years from now or 10 years from now instead of just today. But it's often not because these people are clueless. It's because you're saying, look, why would we pirate? We make all of our money off of this. Why would we want to jeopardize that with something as simple as innovation?
Well, I think that the one thing is that the pure numbers, and what Apple has proven, I think, over and over and over again, is that the pure numbers of consumers is not as valuable as the quality of what those numbers represent,
right,
as far as purchase power. And so the thing is that one of the things that a lot of advertisers and people that we've talked to when we're working is they view iPhone users as very, very valuable because they're willing to spend a lot of money on stupid things.
Right.
And so the thing is
like
that
iPhone. Hey!
Like iPhones. And so the thing is that that makes them a very valuable consumer, more valuable than the average consumer, from a someone who's trying to sell things, you know. And so that's something to also keep in mind. The other thing is that I think that, you know, Apple has the rumor has bounced around here and there, but Apple has 100 billion reasons why they could decide to really put a lot of pressure on the cable companies if they wanted to. If they took the top, if they started producing some kind of mesh network or something else that allowed them to provide services to the top 10 markets or the top 20 markets, they would put the entire cable industry into cardiac arrest. You know, and so the thing, and they have, and that's one of the reasons that if you think about why you would save up that kind of money, that's one of the reasons that I would do it. You know, you don't have to take over everybody. You just take the big markets.
Right. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk, speaking of rumors, great article, Time Magazine's Techland column by Harry McCracken about fact-checking Digitimes. We'll talk about that in just a second. How often has Digitimes been wrong? The answer may surprise you. But first, a word from FreshBooks.com. I am a big fan of FreshBooks. Anybody who has a small business ought to know about FreshBooks.
You know, my number one problem with cash flow is,
what is it?
Invoicing.
Yeah, you sending out the request for money. Yes. I don't know why that's so
I've
hard.
I've already done the work.
It's because it's a pain in the
complicated.
Behind. If you're using Microsoft Word with a little logo and then you have to type it in, or maybe you got sophisticated, you're using Excel and it actually adds it up for you. This was me until I found FreshBooks, and I am so glad I did. FreshBooks.com will allow you, it's the easy online invoicing app for small businesses, will allow you to upload your logo, create professional-looking invoices, and then get you paid faster. That's the bottom line, isn't it? Go to FreshBooks.com and take a look. Focus on your work, not your paperwork. Everybody who is in business understands that getting paid is the challenge. But you can't get paid until you send out the invoice. One of the things that's cool about FreshBooks is it makes it easy. In fact, almost, dare I say it, fun to do your invoicing. If you do time and hours, they have an app for that. In fact, you could do it on the web or on the iPhone. Track the time and hours, and then you don't have to manually enter it. It automatically sucks it right into the invoice. Invoices are multi-currency, which is great for me because I was working all, you know, in Canada and so forth. It's just great. I could do it in Canadian dollars, U.S. dollars, euros, pounds, anything. Your clients, now this is the important part, can view the invoices online and pay right on the spot. With a credit card, they have a variety of online payment systems they can use. And, of course, around tax time, your account will love you. Remember what happened last month? Don't have that happen again. Next year, you just have FreshBooks make a report, and boom, your accountant's happy. Automated late payment reminders. If you want physical invoices, I know some old-fashioned clients do like to have that paper invoice. FreshBooks will do that for you. They'll print and mail them to your clients, complete with a return envelope for an additional fee, of course. I want you to try it right now. 30 days of unlimited use, every feature, as many clients as you want, as many staff members as you want. No limits. Just go to FreshBooks.com. When they ask you during sign-up, where'd you hear? Just say MacBreak. Tell them MacBreak. 30 days of unlimited use, all the features, with no limits, at FreshBooks.com. Start doing your work, not your paperwork. It's very easy online invoicing, which I was very happy when I found out about, I got to tell you. So I love this. There's two articles that I read in the last couple of days that I just loved, and I wanted to share both of them with you. First of all, Harry McCracken. We love Harry anyway. He's a regular on Twitter. Fact-checking Digitimes. And, you know, everybody knows that Digitimes, which is the Taiwanese. Now, see, they have some standing because they are the newspaper of the Taiwanese supply chain, right? So, in theory, they would be able to talk to all these supply chain people. They were the ones who said Apple's going to do a $799 MacBook Air and many other crazy things. But if you look, and then Harry did the work, so this is totally Harry, thank you. In 2006, Digitimes says new iPod may have wireless capabilities. Apple never did do a Wi-Fi iPod until the iPod Touch much later. Sources in the passive component industry say AMD-based Apple notebook in the works. I remember we spent an inordinate amount of time talking about that. Still has not happened. Apple and ViewSonic to unveil 17-inch widescreen LCD monitors soon. No. Apple and HP to launch LED-based notebooks. Well, actually, they do. I think they got that one right. 15.4-inch MacBooks to begin shipping in second quarter. This was in 2007. It never did a plain MacBook at that screen size. Apple reportedly to postpone Leopard to support Windows Vista. Yeah, they postponed Leopard, but I don't think they support Windows Vista to this day. NAND flash-based iPod video to put strain on supply, says component makers. They did do flash-based iPods with video playback. So that's a good one. Apple reportedly considering Intel platform for iPhone. Well, they may be considering it. They never did. MEMS gyroscopes to find their way into smartphones. A year later, they did with the iPhone 4. WinTech to supply touch panels for Apple Netbook. Nope. There is no Apple Netbook. So WinTech never got that work. Anyway, it goes on. Micro projectors.
What they have is a very imaginative intern that is sending them emails from an outside IP source.
Apple tablet PC reportedly delayed until 2010, with OLED model now included. It doesn't even make sense. 22-inch touch-enabled all-in-one PC in 2010. Anyway, so you get the idea. Thank you, Harry McCracken, for reminding us that Digitimes is more often wrong than right. So don't get all excited. I was excited about the $799 Air because our school, I told you this last week, you weren't here. The school my kids go to, they have a one-to-one computer program, and they have been giving MacBooks, the white MacBooks, to incoming freshmen every year for 10 years. They can't do it anymore. They're going to Lenovo Windows machines because they can't afford. There is no sub-$1,000 notebook anymore from Apple. They can't afford to give them Airs.
There's no, I thought that, not, well, there isn't one.
$999 is the cheapest.
Isn't there, and the education price I thought was a little lower than that.
I don't think it's much. $999 is the education price. Sorry. You, it's kind of depressing.
I welcomed them to the.
And they told me, I said, oh, come on. When, really? And they said, look, with the money we're saving, we're taking a half-time teacher to full-time. We're adding a new arts program.
And we're adding six more IT folks to manage all of it.
Well, that's what I said. I said, that's actually what I said. I deeply hope you don't regret this down the road.
And they will.
Well, we'll see. I hope not. So this is good news. You know, at the end of June, MobileMe, and the biggest thing you'll be losing on MobileMe is your photo albums.
So I'm still bitter about this.
I have hypothesized that by, in fact, I think Andy, you did too, that before MobileMe went in a month, that Apple would come up with some form of iCloud photo albums. Mm-hmm. And according to the Journal, it's going to happen. Photo and video sharing services with iOS 6 over iCloud. I'm sure this is a leak to the Wall Street Journal. From Apple, from within Apple. The Journal quotes people familiar with the matter. I think this is Apple's way of saying, don't freak out. Yes?
When is it cutting off? Is it June 30th or is it?
June 31st, yeah, or June 30th, right? Yeah.
And the iPad, the iOS version of iPhoto also has iCloud album share. Journal. Their version of albums is journals.
Right.
So they already have a way to publish that to your iCloud account.
Oh, that goes to iCloud. Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah. So you can hand out like a basic open URL that other people can access, but it doesn't have the sort of controls that you would want to have either the sort of granularity where you make sure it's not a public URL. Only people that you've permitted to actually give access to can actually use it. Right. So yeah, that is something they're going to have to spackle over. There's so much transition in iCloud, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's going to be October or November before we can really say that all the components of iCloud are in place and we can actually see the system that Steve Jobs was promising a couple of years ago.
One good thing, the closed beta of iCloud for iOS 6 now has syncing of reminders and notes into the cloud, which is good.
It's important.
Yeah, because I use reminders for my shopping list, right? I have a shopping reminder and it's really nice. You tell Siri, you know, add milk to shopping list is all you have to say.
I've never done that.
Oh, yeah. Watch. What do you want me to buy?
Some soy milk.
Okay. That's bad for you. You'll grow breasts.
What?
Add soy milk to shopping list. Yeah, there's an analog to estrogen is in soy.
I don't use soy milk.
Okay. I can add this to your shopping list and reminders.
And see, it says shopping soy milk.
Shall I go ahead?
Yes, please do, Siri, even though it gives you breasts.
let me guess, that conference call that you were on was you're trying to pitch the soy production board on buying ads. They said no.
All right, I'm a little angry.
so now you're trying to appeal to the almond milk production board.
Actually, that's what I drink is almond milk because almonds are good.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah,
I use it for tea.
Which soy or almond?
Siri. Every time I do my tea, I go, remind me to get tea in 5 minutes.
Well, this is another good thing about Siri. You can say, next time I'm at the tea room, remind me to buy tea at the tea room.
You know, I don't do location very often because it burns my battery down.
When you tell
Siri that to remind about
a location, looking all the time.
She's looking all the time like, is he there? Is he there?
That would explain the fact that I'm down to 10% here.
Right. Location-based stuff is kind of dangerous with Siri.
Yeah, well, I also have Foursquare telling me it just whenever I get somewhere. Hey, your friend Alex said, try almond milk.
Right.
Wait a minute, almond milk and coffee acts like saltpeter?
I love saltpeter is awesome. When mixed with charcoal sulfur.
Anyway, well, how do we get on this? Oh, syncing reminders would be a nice feature, wouldn't it? Because then my shopping list would be on my all my devices. So that's the Wall Street Journal. I'm pretty sure that this is an accurate rumor, not a DigiTimes rumor.
Why would you want to use Apple's own sort of, you know, social networking photo sharing thing anyway? It's going to be like Ping, a big ghost town.
Although photo sharing is different. You're not, it's not like you're publishing it to the entire world. You just want like your friends and your family to get access to it.
Right.
I was like thinking about that.
Family on Facebook?
Excuse me?
Like your friends and family on Facebook?
I don't use Facebook, and I don't. I have people who do. I'd much rather have the control of saying, here's a URL, click on this, and you'll be able to see my pictures. I really don't like exposing even family photos to the cloud.
Right, Leander. I share it all to Facebook. I share it to Instagram, and I use Path. So
yeah, right.
I'm not holding my breath for an Apple solution.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Apple really.
But the point is, Apple had a solution, and they're going to kill it June 30th. And there are people who use it, like Mr. I Inako.
We use it a lot, I used to use it a lot, and then I try to stop using it because I'm afraid that it'll go away. But you know, just exactly what Andy said. I don't want to put it on a service. I just want to be able to have collections of movies and
but
videos.
But there are lots of solutions that can do that.
They can. It was just really nice to be able to do it from iPhoto or from without having to think about it. You know, I like having that seamless connection where I can just build this all out and go. And I don't want to use some other service.
Exactly. It's click one button. Here's a URL. Done.
Yeah,
this hasn't affected me, but it's affected friends of mine who have kids. They're saying that, you know, there's in any group of more than seven people in your friends and family group that you want to share something with, there's always somebody who hasn't really gotten into Facebook yet, or they've signed up and they've forgotten two years ago, and so I have to balance wanting to show pictures of my new baby with 2 weeks of saying no, go click on preferences and then privacy controls. And then click on permit tagging. Oh, for God's sakes. What if I print them out at the CVS and mail them to you, Auntie? Would that work?
One other feature of MobileMe that's down for the count, and so far there's no word of a replacement, is iDisk. Do we need iDisk? I mean, we've got Dropbox. We've got lots of other solutions. Do we need iDisk?
Yeah, Apple definitely let that pitch go by. If they had used iDisk the same way that Apple was relying on iCloud, where it's really an implicit part of the entire Mac experience, it could have been relevant. As it was just an expensive piece of network storage that was too complicated to use.
They invented Dropbox.
Yeah,
they invented Dropbox, and then they let Dropbox take the business.
Well, it's kind of gone to the particular apps now, though, right? So iTunes, you have movies and your music backed up to iTunes Match, and it stores all the movies you bought in the cloud and document syncing, right? So you can store all your documents if you created them in iOS apps. So you know it's no longer one big bucket, but the functionality is still there.
Right. It was Dropbox. It was Dropbox. iKhalif says no, mounted volume versus synced folder. iDisk, you could either have it on your desktop and synced. You couldn't mount an iDisk. Or yeah, you could.
Yeah, you could.
Yes, you could. They later on added a feature where you could actually have offline access to iDisk contents by syncing with your desktop. Not everybody wanted to have a 20 gigabyte whole slice of their 256 gig hard drive setup.
No, I'm not saying. I think Dropbox did it better. But the idea was iDisk. Original idea,
right? Exactly, and iDisk had to be the simple explanation is that Dropbox did it better by simply saying, "See this folder? Great, it's the same folder on every machine you use. We'll take care of everything."
Right. And now Google's doing that with Google Drive. I mean, it's kind of everywhere. So Apple doesn't need to do it, but it's kind of a shame because they did kind of own it.
I'd be very surprised if in the first round of third-party apps. After 10.8 is released, we don't see an application like Air Sharing that simply says, "Here is AirDisk." Here is an app that simply uses part of your iCloud allocation simply as a mountable flash drive that's accessible to your iPad, your iPhone, everything like that.
Right.
Or even better, something that will actually I was about to say something foolish and say that, and suggest that there could be an app in which individual iOS apps are allowed to communicate with each other in a productive way. But of course, that's just crazy juice talk. And I'm sorry about that.
Crazy talk. Must be all that cane sugar in there.
Have you guys used AirDrop at all? It actually works remarkably well.
I used it once. Yeah.
I started using it now. Now I use it in the office. All you sit there and look at it because you just throw something at someone and then they just say yes, I'll take it, and I don't have to figure out where their folder is. Right. I didn't use it until like 3 weeks ago, and now I was like, why didn't I use this all the time? But anyway,
it's not good for sharing a single file to multiple people.
No, but if you want to,
if it's one to one, instead of attaching an email, just one to one.
If you're in a work group and I've got let me give it to you, and I don't have to think about like a shared folder or anything else. I can just throw it at them and then they just say yes and pull it down.
It's much like iDisk. It's the seed of a good idea.
You know, the biggest problem, the reason I stopped using iDisk was because the feedback of how long it took to upload something to iDisk was so bad.
It wouldn't tell you what was happening.
It would be like nothing and then done.
Yeah.
And so you never knew whether how much longer am I going to be connected before it's up there, you know? And the feedback was so bad that I just stopped using it because I couldn't figure it out.
I predict you will stop using AirDrop for the same reason. It'll be like,
iDisk is really, really useful because it's a good way to look at photos and files that were important to me in 2006, 2007. Right. That's roughly the last time I used it, so that's about the age of the files that are still in there.
And something else coming to iOS 6, and do we think iOS 6 is coming out at WWDC?
At least previewed.
Previewed.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to come out, but I bet you it'll be previewed. That's the time that they would do that. They probably talk about 10.8, talk about iOS 6.
What do you think iOS 6 would be the fall for iPhone 5?
That's my guess.
Yeah.
They're going to give it a few weeks for developers, I think, to get their apps ready for it.
Right. And WWDC is when? June.
June.
10th, 12th.
So in a couple of weeks, we'll find out about it. One of the stories, 9 to 5 Mac says Apple will have dropped Google Maps and do its own in-house maps with incredible 3D mode. This is a mock-up, obviously. What do you think about that? I think it's pretty obvious that Apple's intending to do something like that. They bought PlaySpace, which was... They bought three mapping companies, C3 Technologies, Poly9, and PlaySpace.
Well, they better do it well. That's all I got to say. I mean, it's... Yeah.
Well, if they implement this company's technology the way that this company was demoing it before the buyout, it's pretty hot stuff. It really is just like having your own helicopter with a gimbal-mounted camera that can violate all FAA regulations on every major city. And just simply, I mean, you think it's pretty cool right now to be able to go to Google Street View or to go to Bing Maps, where you can go from the bird's eye to the sort of slanted view, so you can actually see the relative position of buildings to streets. This is truly, I want to fly all around this building so that I know that when I walk from the train station to the Starbucks, I know that what I'm looking for is this orange sign in front of the bank, and that's the point where I have to turn left. It really is cool stuff.
C3 Technologies does this. This is what we're talking about. They call it photorealistic 3D mapping. And Poly9 is also in three-dimensional mapping. So, you know, we talked about this on Twit on Sunday, and Dvorak, who's a big fan of the Google Maps experience and the Google navigation on Android, pointed out it's a huge risk because, as you say, Andy, it's a huge risk because the standard is Google. So you're replacing something that is the standard that works. People like, there's no turn-by-turn on the iPhone as there is on Android.
Apple's in a position of strength because they're in such a position of weakness. Every time I try out an Android phone to write about it, and I'm carrying around for the 3-4 days, the thing that I always love about it is the navigation, because their navigation is absolutely top notch. It's not necessarily because of their access to maps; it's just because they put really great software on there. Apple could write software like that if they wanted to, or they could buy companies that make software like that. It's just that it's taken them 2 years now to figure out exactly how to enhance the maps functionality in iOS. So hopefully we're starting to see them pulling up their socks there and trying to get back into the game.
Well, also hopefully it's not Apple being petulant and saying we're not going to do anything Google does, and so we're going to do this. They're truly saying we're doing it because we can do something better.
Right, and they're probably, unfortunately, it's probably going to be an ad platform.
Oh, yeah. Well, it is on Google, right? Google's just added the capability to put ads on those maps.
I think it's crucial. I mean, because it's the most effective way of knowing where you are and what you're looking at, and
right.
And also, you know, for it's you know the device now is a crucial shopping device. You know, especially for things like tickets, events, right. Checking in, all kinds of location-based services. So they probably want to integrate that into the really deeply into the operating system. So you know, I mean, people are worried about privacy issues now. I think this is going to be a major hairball in the future, especially if, you know, I think if Apple makes this step, then it's going to be definitely a commerce platform.
What do your sources tell you, Leander, about the next iPhone? Some say September 7th.
To be honest, I don't know I haven't got any sources about the release date or what the design looks like. We published a rumor earlier this week that it was going to be significantly different in terms of its design, industrial design, which, you know, I think is probably likely. I mean, all I can do is offer some informed speculation.
Well, it's a fair prediction, because Apple has pretty clearly been on the 2-year TikTok update cycle for iPhones. Minor upgrade, which we just had, which was the 4S. Major upgrade, which was the 4, and presumably would be the 5.
Yeah. I like the idea of the stretch screen. So it'll have a 4-inch screen, but it won't be as wide as some of the Android devices. It'll be longer. I think that makes a lot of sense, because the width, it maintains that same easy-to-grip width, and it goes into pockets, and it's not like a huge half tablet.
Right.
And I can see them, they're going to need to make it bigger. They're going to have a bit of bigger battery for the LTE radio, because that thing's such a power-hungry, and also for the bigger screen. So I think they're going to have to make it larger to accommodate those components. But I imagine it's still going to be pretty, still pretty sleek and smooth. Some of the new Android, like the new Samsung Nexus, is really, you know, that's quite a big device, but it's still thin and it still fits nicely in your hand and into your pocket. I think it's going to look, you know, somewhat like that.
And then will they keep? I guess they will. The 4 form factor is like the less expensive, like as they did with the 3GS when the 4 came out.
They'll definitely keep it around.
Like the $50 iPhone.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty nice phone for $50. Yeah, you know, it's hard to think of this as like, oh, that's the old one.
I know, and I think the iPhone 4 is really beautiful. I mean,
it is gorgeous.
And I just dropped mine on the concrete again for the 10th time, and
it's impractical.
No. It's great. There's not a scratch on it. I don't have a scratch on it.
I don't know why that is. It's made out of glass. You're just lucky.
Yeah. Well, it stood up really well. It stood up really, really well. And
you are very lucky, Leander, because I think that's not the normal
experience.
I have to admit, I've dropped mine almost daily now. I don't know why, but
it'll break.
Recently, I waited for a mosquito. I hate mosquitoes, and I waited for a mosquito to land on my arm, and then I hit him, you know, killed him, and knocked the iPhone out of my hand that I was holding into the gravel. I thought for sure I'd lost it.
Well, I've never broken mine except for dipping it in water, but that was intentional. I've never broken the glass on mine. But my kids have broken the glass on theirs every single time. It's not too expensive to just get the glass replaced, but I've brought phones in to get the back and front glass replaced at least half a dozen times.
Really? With the iPhone 4?
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
But maybe that's teenagers.
My wife, who is the most destructive person in the world, probably apart from your kids, she has an iPhone 4, and that's still kicking. I mean, it's the only one that she hasn't destroyed. I've got a stack of devices that she's killed.
Maybe I've been unlucky then. I think that
the only design thing I don't like about the iPhone 4 is that it really is a very slippery phone. Yeah. There's nothing that will cause it to grip on any surface. So between the iPhone 4 and the 4S, I've actually broken the black back glass at least twice. And so that's why later on I decided, at minimum, I usually put like a strip of gaffer's tape on the back, just so that if I put it like on the sofa arm or put it on someplace, it's not going to simply start sliding off millimeter by millimeter. I have this new spec case on it that I really, really like, truthfully, because it just has this rubberized backing on it.
Right.
So when you put it on the table, it stays on the table.
It is a shame to put a case on the beautiful iPhone. Leander, do you not use a case?
Yeah, I've used a case. I can't, Andy, do you really stick gaffer tape on your
we understand. This is a man wearing tactical pants, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll tell you exactly why. Because one of my default positions for having the phone is I'm on the sofa, I'm watching TV, I've got the iPhone on the armrest of the sofa in case like someone texts me or in case someone looks something up. And it's like, unless you balance it exactly at the apex and you don't move in the sofa, it's going to start to slide. And at some point, you'll like shift your weight and just boom, goes off the armrest of the sofa. And there's so many times when I'm trying to pull it out of my other phones don't slide out of my pocket as easily as
this
the
thing.
iPhone
does. It jumps out of your pocket.
It's almost as if it's made out of Teflon. It's like if there's any gap in my shirt pocket, I'll bend over just a little bit too far and boom, out it goes. Whereas if I put just a strip of gaffer's tape on the back of it, or if I go to Home Depot, spend 8 cents for one of those carpet gripper things, it would give just enough. Is that the silliest thing you've ever heard? You've lived on planet Earth for how many decades, and that's the silliest thing you've ever heard? That I don't like my iPhone to be quite so snippy as Cupertino seems.
Wait,
to
where's
want
to can make you show us things. The gaffer's tape? Where's the gaffer?
On the back, on the side.
Well, it's I took it off because
he has this thing.
It's just like it's like one strip of like black tape. Yeah, it also covers up the Apple logo so that if I'm ever invited to be like a guest star on Big Bang Theory, they won't have to cover up the sticker.
Right.
So I'm just trying to grease the wheels for when the producer wants to ask me to be a cameo actor on Big Bang Theory.
I love
you'd be great on the Big Bang Theory.
You should be on the Big Bang Theory.
You should be like a regular. You should be like the neighbor.
Yeah,
that they just walk over and ask questions. That would be awesome.
I would happily be like the Don Knotts.
Yeah,
on that show.
Sheldon,
what's this you're saying about buying a pod?
Sheldon. So see, I have a tether on my iPhone, but that actually comes out very handy because you can't.
Good for fishing it out of the toilet after.
Yeah, exactly. So you do this, and then when I walk around with an iPhone like that, or when I'm taking pictures,
you could do that just as easily with some gaffer tape.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, I'm just saying. But this is to your point of being slippery. You're absolutely right, and so that's why when I take pictures, I often will put this on because I know I'm going to go. Whoa, whoa, whoa. But that's probably
whenever I have one of Apple's loaners, it's like, I feel like one of the things I really want to test out is like how well the camera works. And man alive, I'm never more paranoid about a borrowed device where I know that here's this thin glass thing with like nothing to hold on to.
Exactly.
And when I'm traveling on vacation, I'm really glad that I have a case like this because it gives you stuff to actually hold on to.
And yet it's criminal to do anything to that beautiful design, but it's not.
Well, I still honestly think that one of the brilliant things about the iPhone 4 and 4S design, on top of just being a really beautiful object in and of itself, it's all flat planes and right angles. So anybody who wants to design some sort of a case or some sort of a mounting for it can make a case that fits it perfectly. So if you want to make a camera grip for it, if you want to make a car grip
for it.
You don't have to do this sort of like halfway gestures. You can actually make it so that it looks like that this was just like this is just like the battery that you're sliding into this little hole. This rewind playback. I'm sorry. I've had three deep photos now. What I'm saying is that it's really easy to make cases and frames for it that fit really, really exactly. And so if they come up with a new one that's sort of like curved and smiley face and slightly banana shaped. As always, there's always that first generation of cases and stuff that kind of fits it, but not really because they didn't have the actual hardware to pull a mold off of. So,
what I want is a great case that has some kind of protector for the front, but also has a battery and a quarter 20 so that you can hook it to tripods. See, that's
nobody's made that yet.
I went over to the Mophie thing.
I love the Mophie case, but just to add a 20, quarter 20.
Give me a quarter 20 on that Mophie case and we're set.
You know, that actually, they could.
Awesome. And like a little lens mount on the front.
Now you're just crazy tough.
And two XLR inputs.
Well, that's a given. I mean, come on now.
And an Ethernet jack. Don't forget the Ethernet jack.
All right. I said I was going to talk about two articles I really love this week. This is the other one from Scott Hanselman, who, don't hold it against me, works for Microsoft, but he's been thinking about icons that we use, and this—I just thought this was so great—that don't make any sense. For instance, what is the save icon? It's a floppy disk, huh? Radio buttons. When's the last time your car's radio had buttons? Clipboards. You see a lot. Actually, I have one in my hands, but it's not that common. Bookmarks. Do people even use books anymore? Address books, calendars. This is that skeuomorphic in a way. I love this one. What do they use for the icon for voicemail? They use those two. It looks, it's tape. It's two reels with a tape between it. Right?
That was a long time ago.
Does anybody, my kid, my 17-year-old, who's never seen a tape recorder, let alone an answering machine with tape in it, does he even understand what that is? But he knows what that icon means. The manila folder. All folders now have manila folders, right? But really, who uses those anymore?
You go a little too far with that. I think people understand what a pen is.
They do. But the voicemail one and this one I agree with completely.
Oh, yeah.
Telephone handset. Come on the hand.
And not just for like young people. I was watching that really great Johnny Carson documentary last night.
I want to see that.
And every time they're showing you like old videotape that won't upscale well, they get around it into HD. They get around it by showing it like in like a TV set of the period. And I grew up with like the 19-inch, 13-inch color TV with the two tuning knobs on it. But I haven't seen one in like 15 years.
It's fun.
Like, wow, what is that? And there's a second knob inside the first. Wow.
Yes. Remember, that was for the tuning of the UHF. You had to fine-tune the UHF.
Oh, I love it.
Magnifying glasses, binoculars, envelopes.
But I think the part of it
wrenches
is
wrenches and gears.
But I think that the part of the issue is that the old analog devices make good icons.
You know, they like, do. The Siri icon is the same microphone Johnny Carson used. It's an old ribbon mic that, you know, nobody uses these anymore. But you know what it is, right?
But how else are you going to identify it? I mean, the analog devices give us something that you can build a simplified icon around that makes
sense. My son thinks that's a time release capsule with a tuning fork around it.
It's slowly filling up with bits.
Remember Contact, cold medicine? That's what it looks like. Yeah. A Polaroid SX70 is the icon for Instagram. But of course, we know what it is, right? And there's those TVs that you talk about with rabbit ears. They always, when they have a TV icon, it's always got rabbit ears.
I never had rabbit ears.
Who has rabbit ears? Carbon copies?
It would look like a microwave, wouldn't it, if you didn't have the rabbit ears on it? I think that's a...
It tells you what it is.
It's got to be a physical device.
And it's cultural.
It's telling you, put something into the microwave. Step through in the lean cuisine.
Anyway, thank you, Scott Hanselman. Hanselman.com for writing that. I think it's a really great article. We forget. Well, I still say dial the phone. I don't think anybody knows what that means.
No.
Dial? When's the last time we had a phone with a dial on it?
I was talking to somebody who said that they had one in a classroom and the kids will go up and they'll hit the buttons. Right. Like they'll like hit the button like it's not working. Like they don't think of turning it. I mean they don't even consider it. They just like this isn't working. I can't.
Where do you the sandwich? There's no sand in it. It's not made out of witches. Am I right? Let's bring out your headliner. Sorry.
One more couple of things. We mentioned Dropbox apps being blocked on the Apple Store. That was apparently just a glitch. People assumed it was because of in-app purchases with Dropbox. Once again, Dropbox-enabled apps are being approved by Apple, so that ain't true. Last week, we had Darren Okada on, and he talked about the FDR video, which he shot with Steve Jobs.
Right.
Now a new video shows up, the Steve Jobs Lost Ghostbusters parody. We'll have to skip by the ad on Bloomberg here. This will take a little while. I hate pre-roll ads. Especially for Goldman Sachs. Here we go. New video released. This is an exclusive from Bloomberg, so we probably can't even play this for you. Of Steve Jobs, Ghostbuster. This is for the dealer conference. And they were wearing Macs on their backs. And then they would shoot the IBM PC.
That was an Apple II, actually.
Is that an Apple II or a Mac? There's a Mac on one of them, and there's an Apple
IIc on the front. Yeah.
Yeah, one of them has a Mac. Yeah, so that's how old this is. Look at that. Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters. All right, that's a fun one. They make these videos. All corporations make these videos for sales meetings, and that was what that was. Ashton Kutcher? God. Yeah, no kidding, God. We talked about this on Twitter, and I said he was sporting Andy Inatko-style mutton chops.
Well, in that case, he's awesome.
Yeah. But he looks pretty good from a distance in the Steve Jobs. But the problem is Ashton Kutcher's beard pattern is bizarre. and does not in any way look like Steve Jobs.
He looks like Ashton Kutcher wearing a pullover. That's what he looks like.
Yeah. They should use a phony beard for Ashton to make it look more like Steve, I think. That beard's wrong.
Yeah, they have to fill that in.
Yeah, they have to fill it in. Just a little...
Hair weave.
You could just spirit gum.
I'm not going to make any fun of it because my beard looks worse. That's why I shave.
Unfortunately, I cannot ask Siri what the best smartphone ever is anymore. They fixed that.
Oh, did they?
Let me try it. What is the best smartphone ever?
The one you're holding.
Yeah, it used to say the it used to say the Nokia Lumia 900. That's bizarre.
It's just a Wolfram Alpha.
It's a Wolfram Alpha bug.
It's not a bug. It's just that.
Well,
a bug. It's just so Stalinist revisionism.
Yes.
There never was a Marshall Forsten. You are imagining. See picture of Stalin. No one next to him. He never existed. Now continue on, comrade. Continue to make Zeal automobiles.
And you had this on the Cult of Mac. Leander Alex Heath writing says, apparently Wozniak really likes Mark Zuckerberg. He says he's an acute businessman with the ability to understand markets and what people want. And he says, actually, that Zuckerberg is a combination of Woz and Jobs, by which he means that Woz was the engineer and the scientist and Jobs was the marketer. And he says Zuckerberg combines both those attributes. This is an interview in Bloomberg Business Week. Under the close direction of Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook recently acquired Instagram, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, I think Woz is right. Zuck seems to have both those skills. It sounds like Woz is going to be buying Facebook stock next Friday.
Yeah, he said no matter what the price is, he's going to buy a bunch.
I think, you know, I think
he can afford it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. You know, I think Woz did not make out as well as others from Apple.
No, but I think he's
probably made out all right.
Pretty well said, I think, yeah. But he was very generous. He gave away a lot of his shares in the early days to people he felt were being underserved.
Right. That's including Dan Conkey. That's right.
And he spent it on great things like music.
The Us Festival. He spent much of his fortune on the Us Festival. Yeah. He gave Woz Way in San Jose. Is named Woz Way because he gave a lot of money to set up the computer museum there, which is a great museum for kids and adults. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, our iOS and Mac OS... He's back. Our iOS, Mac OS tips.
Oh, I have a great one.
Our picks of the week coming up. But first, ladies and gentlemen, a word from Audible.com, that great bookstore of audio books. 100,000 strong. It's got to be more than that. I should do a search and see because I think they're probably now closer to 150,000. Just so many great books out there. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak, you can sign up for that gold account and get your first book free, because that first month is free and you'll get a credit towards a book, and you can keep that book, cancel it anytime, keep that book. It's yours to keep forever. And I think that's a pretty good deal. I want you to go to audible.com right now and browse around, see what book you might want. Andy, what are you listening to? I'm listening to The Stand right now. What are you listening to right now?
I'm listening to a really cool business book. Actually more of a history book about the Walt Disney Company during a really tumultuous 10-year period. It's called by James B. Stewart. And it's called Disney War. And it's nonfiction. It's about a period in which Michael Eisner took over the company and quickly made enemies, including like the right-hand man he brought in, Jeffrey Katzenberg, who fought with him endlessly about the need to move from traditional animation to digital animation. And over the course of the story, Katzenberg splits off and starts DreamWorks. Meanwhile, the deal that Disney had with Pixar starts to go sour, and Pixar says, you know what, we're going to just not renew this deal. Good luck with you with that. Meanwhile, the Disney name executive, Roy Disney, who was Walt Disney's nephew, is so fed up with Eisner that he quits the company and starts bad-mouthing him everywhere. So using the Disney name to say, no, Michael's just a suit. He's an idiot. He's a jerk. He doesn't know anything about the business. So it really is just like a good 1980s-style, like, nighttime drama where like William Forsythe is playing like the patriarch of an oil family. It's just nothing but drama and tension and just fighting between rich people who want wealth and power but don't want to give up either one of those things to get both of them. So
what's the name of it again?
It's called Disney War by James B. Stewart.
Wow, that sounds great.
Also, good value, unabridged at 25 hours and 47 minutes.
Holy
so if you're trying to stick it to the man for a free title, this is a good one to stick
to. Go to audible.com/MacBreak. Get your free book. Browse around. See all the books. By the way, one of the things they're doing, which I really like, they, yes, of course, have lots of new books. But they also are re-recording or recording, in some cases for the first time, classics like The End of the Affair by Graham Greene. What a great book that is. The Unbearable Lightness of Being. These are new audio editions of classic books. So don't think Audible is just the latest bestsellers. Of course it is, but it's very deep. There is a lot of stuff. Let me do a search. Let's see, if I do a search by title and I don't provide anything, I wonder if it'll give me, that'll be everything, right? I'm just curious how many books. I think this is a fast way to count how many books. Oh, the other thing I love when I go to my Audible account and I see, oh, you have 2 credits. Yay! Can't
ready
wait.
To rock and roll.
Ready to rock and roll. That's kind of the point. I subscribe, of course. That's the point in the month I look forward to. Let's see, all categories. Let's say I only want audiobooks. We won't include, and they do have, performances, periodicals, radio, TV, and speeches. Let's just see how many audiobooks are currently in the Audible stash. 64,682, according to that search. That's only in English, but let's see if we have them in other languages, too. Oh, yes, there's 5,000 non-English titles as well. Audible.com/MacBreak. Okay, admittedly, that's a lot to choose from, but you'll find something great. Just pick one and make that be your first book. I guarantee you, you'll be back for more. Should we search all categories? Let's say all program types, then see how many we've got here. 106,144. That's the latest count. Audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. And now, an iOS tip.
Okay, so as you may have guessed, I travel a lot.
Yes, you do.
I have a problem. I have a problem.
You got a problem.
I have a problem that, okay, so a lot of times, you know, you go to a hotel room or you're now in your, you go to a hotel room and you can hook your Ethernet in and then you can share because they want to charge you $14.95 for every device, and which is insane. So what you do is you put your Ethernet in, of course, and then you go into your network or you go into your sharing preferences and then you say, I want to share my Ethernet connection via Wi-Fi. And you create your own Wi-Fi network and then all your devices can actually use that Wi-Fi connection and for the hotel, there's just one device connected, right? We all know that one.
Yes.
The problem is a lot of the hotels now only have Wi-Fi.
I know.
And so, and if you're on a plane, it really only has Wi-Fi, you know, go-go, whatever. So it turns out that if you connect via Wi-Fi and you go into your system preferences, one of the options that's there that a lot of people, I don't think a lot of people know about, is there is a Bluetooth, you can say, I want to share via Bluetooth PAN.
Wait a minute, let me just check that out. So system preferences.
Let me tell you, this is great.
System preferences.
Now you've got me traveling with a PAN, Alex.
Yes, exactly. So you're in sharing.
Okay.
Okay, and if you go in there and you look at your
Bluetooth sharing or internet sharing?
There's the trick. You turn both of them on.
So let's turn on Bluetooth sharing, and then we go to internet sharing.
And you turn that on. And you want to say, I want to share my Wi-Fi.
Via Bluetooth.
No, leave that there. No. Share your connection from, not from Wi-Fi,
to Bluetooth PAN.
Now,
wow.
Any laptop or mobile device that is connected to your computer, if you've set up Bluetooth sharing, if you connect those devices, you can connect other laptops, you can connect your iPad, your iPhone, and you can share your Wi-Fi connection to those. Now, it's not super fast. I don't know exactly how fast it is, but it doesn't really matter because most of these hotel rooms are horrible. And
at least you can get online.
So, you know, and
so this shares my Wi-Fi.
And technically, I think it's a federal offense to do it in the air.
So oh, yeah.
You're wondering, you know, so I would, of course, never do it in the air.
That would be wrong. That would,
I would never...
Although
that.
It's odd because they have Wi-Fi exactly. floating around.
I know exactly.
The cannon.
So anyway, but the key is that if you only have a Wi-Fi connection, you can use that Bluetooth, and I have tested it at many.
Will it work with an iPad?
With your iPad, your iPhone.
Wow.
So if you have your Wi-Fi connection, you can use that Bluetooth connection. It takes a little bit of jiggering around to get it to link in. You know, Bluetooth is always kind of a weird connection. Remember that Bluetooth connection isn't very far, so it's not like you can walk all over the place. So it's 30 feet or whatever. But
you do have to turn on Bluetooth, and then you go to internet sharing, you start it, and then you add Bluetooth Pan as a checkbox.
Yep, and then you have to pair the devices.
It's magic.
So anyway, it's very useful if you're traveling a lot, like
very
me.
Cool.
Anyway, that's it.
Our Lion or OS 10 tip from Andy Hinako.
This is actually a fix for a problem that a lot of people have. I was really having a problem with mail on my Mac, where I know that there's I use mail as my short-term and long-term memory. It's sort of like a Dropbox for my brain, where I know that I was talking about this project with someone 2 weeks ago. I'll just do a keyword search. I'll pull up that email and remind myself about the stuff. For some reason, it would just not find stuff that I knew for a fact was in there. So if that happens to you, you're probably going to need to rebuild your mailboxes. And there are two different ways to do that. One of them is to simply click on the mailbox and go to File. The file menu at the very, very end, there's Rebuild Mailbox. This will reconstruct the mailbox from scratch. That is not the nuclear option, however. If that doesn't work, if that doesn't allow you to search to find emails you know that are actually there, you'll have to go into your user library, hold down the Option key in the Finder, switch over to the Go menu. That'll reveal the library directory if you're in Lion. Then just navigate to the folder for mail. And then inside there, you'll find a file called envelope index. So that's where the index, the search index for all of your mail is. So all you have to do then is quit mail, take this envelope index file, move it out of the mail folder. Don't delete it because who knows, you might want it. If things go wrong, you might want to need it back later on. But just take it out of that folder, put it onto the desktop. Then when you relaunch mail, you'll get a very, very, very scary dialog box saying, "Hi, welcome to mail. We're going to have to re-import all of your mail, but then we'll be ready to go. You want to see some features with new mail while you're doing it?" No, just that's fine. Just click on OK. After it grinds away at all your messages for 5 or 10 minutes, it will totally rebuild your indexes, and that should bring back search capability to all of your mailbox. If that fails, there's some command line stuff you can do, but chances are one of these two different things will work. It solved my problems, and suddenly I had my memory back.
Yay. Very handy. Thank you, Handy Andy.
Okay.
Now for our picks of the week, we'll start with Leander Cani, thecultofmac.com.
Okay, all right. So it's the Logitech Ultra Thin keyboard for the iPad. And it's a case that's also a keyboard. Oh, my God. Where do I go? Hold on.
go the other way. Go towards your head. Move toward. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Okay, here we go. So this, actually, it's stuck in there now. It's got a magnet.
It's got a magnet, which is nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you haven't featured this before, have you?
Not on MacBreak Weekly. We actually, if you want to see Sarah's review of it, we did it on Before You Buy this week, our product review show. And she loved it, too.
I'm too thick to work this out. Okay, I'm just going to hold it in front of me. So,
how is it as a case? What it looks like is that you've got aluminum now on both sides of your iPad.
It does, yeah. It's a big aluminum sandwich. And
here, you know what? It
works okay.
I'll hold it up here, and then people can see it, because I have a camera that's really kind of aimed at it. I don't have an iPad for it, though.
You got it?
Yeah. And give me your iPad, Alex, and I'll show you. It's kind of neat because, as you say, it goes. You've got a slot here that is basically like a stand, but it's magnetized, so it uses the magnets in the. So you can actually. That's kind of nice. So it makes it very sturdy feeling.
Right. Yeah. It's a really good stand, and it's a really good keyboard, and it's nearly, not quite, but nearly big enough.
Well, it can only be as wide as the iPad, right? You can't make it any bigger than the iPad.
And this is the big problem, you know, that with all the cases, all the iPad cases. Right. And this one actually is most of them some of them are the same width as the iPad, not the same length as the iPad. So this is one of the bigger ones.
Right.
Because it's actually as wide as the iPad is as long. But it's a nice combination of case and keyboard. The other problem I have with it is the silvery coating. You know, it's already got a couple of scratches on it, and it's not quite as sort of scratch proof as I would like.
Yeah.
But it's nice aesthetically.
It will protect the top of it. It's a hard case.
Yeah.
It gives you access still to all of the ports and the buttons and everything.
Yeah.
And it's using the magnet to hold it on. So it's like the smart cover. Is it smart in the sense that it?
Yeah, it turns it on and off.
Turns it on and off. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it's good. And the battery's life seems pretty good. And it takes a bit of getting used to it. Like, I'm trying to get my workflow to the iPad
Everybody else, right? So we don't have to carry a laptop anymore. Yeah.
Right, definitely. Yeah, I'm going to go away this summer, so I really want to leave the laptop at home.
Unfortunately, it says on Amazon, usually ships within 1 to 3 months. I think you probably want to go to Logitech to get this. It's $100. I hope Logitech has them in stock. Amazon does not.
I'm not sure if they've actually... Is it out yet?
Oh, maybe it's not out. Ah. We are lucky. We have early versions.
It's in Amazon.
Yeah, in 1 to 3 months.
Oh, did I just order it in 1 to 3 months? It said Prime.
Yeah, Prime, within 1 to 3 months.
You'll get it just
That's because I ordered mine.
Yeah.
And I ordered one for everybody.
1 to 3 months. Yeah, do you... See, look at this. Alex actually bought it, Lander.
I need one so badly. I was like, that is the solution.
Well, there are a lot of cases now, and this is Bluetooth, right?
See, mine says it's going to show up on Wednesday.
Oh, well, you maybe.
Because I have it for the iPad 2.
No, it says iPad 2 and new iPad. It's the same.
Mm-hmm. Mine says it's Amazon Prime.
Oh, you got the wrong one.
Did I get the wrong one?
Yeah, you got the one that's the case. You got the case. You want the ultra thin keyboard cover.
Well, I'm glad that you saw it before I did it.
I undo one clicks all the time because I am very impulsive. Good pick. $99. I like it. Thank you, Leanne.
Wasn't your same pick, was it, Leo?
Nope.
Okay.
No, it's a good pick though. I like it. In fact, I want to. Who has claimed this? Because if not, I'm taking it. I
it's
like
yours.
It. Can I keep it? What, is this
your, just did, take it and run.
Well, I think since it was attached to my iPad, I get to take
it. No. It's hidden now in the evil chair. Your pick of the week, Mr. Alex Lindsay.
So I have two, but one is cheap and one is expensive.
Of course.
So
that's why we named a unit of price the Alex.
So the cheap one, by the way, I just want to make sure that people know. I mean, you probably talked about it on Twig, that... You know, if you're not using Google Plus or whatever, Hangouts on Air is really cool, and it is available to everyone now.
And the new Google Plus app for the iPhone, spectacular.
It's spectacular.
It's better than the Android app, although they say they'll have it. And it finally adds Hangouts. Although
you still
can't
do a Hangouts on Air on it.
You could do a Hangout, though.
You could do a Hangout.
And it's not intuitive how you get to the Hangouts, so just keep pressing buttons. I can't figure it out for the life of me.
Someone has to invite you. So anyway, so the...
No, I can start a Hangout. I really can. It's weird, though.
It's hard to get to there, it's but hard it is an awesome app. Yeah. The thing I want to make sure people are clear when they look at Hangouts on Air is now almost everybody's been, you know, has access to Hangouts on Air.
Yeah.
Hangouts on Air allows you to stream a conversation or a video that's going into your Hangouts on Air for free to YouTube.
Right.
With an embed code
YouTube
that you can
live.
Put on your webpage.
Your YouTube Live.
I just want to make sure you're clear of that. I mean, I want to make sure that didn't pass anybody over. I'm always kind of surprised to make sure that you can now stream
we
live.
We all have YouTube Live now.
You basically all have YouTube Live inside via a Hangouts on Air.
And it's just a button in the Hangouts.
And if you want to do a round table or whatever, and it'll connect your, you know, so you can be sitting on G Plus and it'll post to your screen. It's a pretty... crazy feature.
I suppose that you could use Hangouts on Air without having anybody in the Hangout, just you, right?
Yep.
Just don't invite anybody.
And then you could just, it would look a little odd in YouTube because it would be this big window with a bunch of, with one little window at the bottom.
Right.
But yeah, you could do that. And you'd be streaming to YouTube.
Isn't that wild? You know,
for free. So I just thought I'd let you know. I mean, just in case it passed people by, they didn't see the news. It's pretty, pretty awesome. We do a lot of Hangouts. So
I still can't figure out how to do it. There is a way.
There's a way to do it.
I went through it, and there is a way to do it, but it's just not obvious. But the new iPhone Google Plus app does let you do a Hangout from Google Plus. Not on air. I don't know if it's on air or not. It doesn't say ad on air. So
yeah,
it's not.
So, but now my second one's a little more expensive.
How much is that?
This is $2,700. It's three and a half Alex's. So we do. We talked about this a little bit from a video perspective at NAB, but so we record, we do a lot of screen captures, hours and hours and hours of screen captures. And you can use Camtasia, you can use ScreenFlow, those are all great. The problem is you don't get broadcast quality screen captures, you know, that are at full resolution, at full frame rate, that really integrate with something that you can actually send to somebody. And if you're that kind of person looking for that kind of power, it's not what this was designed for, but it's how we use it 90% of the time. This is the Sound Devices PIX 240. And what it has is it has HDMI in and out and a keyboard, of all things. No, you can't type essays on it. I wish you could. It also has SDI, which is, you know, the high performance HD SDI in and out. And of course, you can put real mics into it as well. This slot, I forgot to bring it with me. This slot is for an SSD drive that you can just slide in. Now, the cool thing is if you take a Connex cable, the Connex is a little mini display port to HDMI cable. You can plug it into your Thunderbolt or mini display port that has audio and plug it into the side of this. And this has one feature that a lot of these devices don't have, which is it can see 60p or 30p coming out of your computer. Most need to be 2997 or 5994. So you don't need a scan converter. You can simply plug one little cable into this guy. And then what you can do is you start doing whatever you want. You just hit record and you record it, and then you hit stop and you're done. And if you're someone who wants to get that full motion, if you're doing training that requires video, that has other things that you're doing playback, those things don't play back well when you're trying to capture the screen at the same time. And otherwise you're looking at scan converters, you're looking at all kinds of other things. And for those of you who need this, I thought I would share it with you. We have so many, like almost every person that sees us with one of these in my little industry buys one. Like they're just like, oh, I need, that's what I needed a long time ago. So I thought I'd share it with everybody.
It's better than the Atomos or doesn't Atomos make
it? More expensive, but it is, this is a, I mean, it is such a workhorse. And it has a compact flash on the top as well that you can use. As I said, the SSD is awesome. I use it every day for this type of work, and I don't know what I'd do without it.
We just have to remember that Alex got into this business for one reason and one reason only, so he could buy the toys.
I have a lot of toys.
Just so you understand. I mean, nothing wrong with that. That's why I got into the business.
I like toys. So anyway, that is one of my favorite toys.
It's from Sound Devices.
Sound Devices. They pretty much are the standard for... it's $2,700 for those of you who are
wondering.
It is... they are the standard in the field recording industry. So if you're recording audio in the field for... movies and so on and so forth. And this is their first, this was one of their first ones. They now have one that's only HDMI, which is a little less expensive. I think it's like $1,700 or $2,000. And then they have one that's coming out that's going to be a rack mountable version of that. And anyway, so it doesn't handle the full data from Red, somewhat Virgil on the, but it will take obviously the HDSDI out of the Red if you want to record that as well. So it's, and Alex is $700, not $800. I just want to make sure no one's. There's no. I don't want
to. The Alex was the price of Photoshop.
I always said that
subscription
software
deal.
Should cost the price of Photoshop should be the maximum. That's where
that's the top
came
price.
From.
That's where it came
so
from.
So many years ago. It's in rotary phones now. And Alex is, you know, it's not even in my Wikipedia.
But anymore. The Alex is. It's not. Somebody took it out
someone
of.
Someone took it out of my Wikipedia. Whoever
what?
It is. Screw you.
No, it's someone went through his legacy.
Someone went through my Wikipedia
for his children.
Took a whole bunch of stuff out, and I was like, really? And I can't put it back in because it's my Wikipedia page. And I was like, it was so much. My Wikipedia thing was so much fun before. And now it's ruined.
If you go to sounddevices.com, you can read that more. And the one you're recommending is the PIX 240.
The 240, the 260 is what we're going to buy like 10 of as soon as they come out.
That one's a widescreen. What is that?
Well, that's a rack mountable version of it. You can put two SSD drives behind the screen and have eSATA on the back and have up to 32 channels of independently delayed audio.
How much would you pay?
I think it's like.
Don't even. If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
I'm going
to
say it's like $4,000 or something like that. It's not.
Andy Anatko, your pick of the week, my friend.
Well, I'm very proud to say that. I think it's been a long, long time since I've recommended something that was even one Alex.
Yes.
And so this today's the big day. I'm finally getting around to reviewing the Ooh. Panasonic GX1 Micro Four Thirds camera. It was released like late last year. Panasonic like sent me one early, but I had to send it back in like 2 weeks. And I don't think I had enough time to really like rock and roll with it and really figure it out. I've had this one for now about a month, a little bit more than that, and really fell in love with it. I really think that this is the sweet spot for these compact system cameras.
This is interchangeable lenses, right?
Exactly. A whole bunch of different companies have now gotten that game of having these cameras where it tries to be a hybrid between a pocket camera that's nice and small and compact and an SLR where you have a library of interchangeable lenses and also a nice large image sensor. So you're getting much better image quality than you would on a conventional pocket camera. And one of the hottest cameras right now happens to be the Sony NEX-7 and the Sony NEX-5, which are very good cameras. They have an even bigger image sensor than this, not much bigger, but bigger enough that it gives it the Sony cameras much better low light performance and wider dynamic range. And so it translates to better pictures in some instances. But I really think that this one really hits the sweet spot because it does cost an Alex. So this with the standard kit zoom lens will cost a little bit under $700. If you just buying the body only, if you already have these Micro Four Thirds lenses, it's about $549. If you buy the really cool motorized super compact zoom lens, it's closer to $900. So it's much more compact. Not only that, but it really is built like a traditional camera, which is something that I think is important. When you go to that Sony camera, they don't have these mechanical buttons on the back. Everything is done on the Sony via touchscreen. So you can't do something as simple as take one of these buttons, program like your favorite feature into it. For me, I really need to have flash compensation programmed into a button, because there are times when I want a little bit of fill-in flash. The camera can't figure it out quite right. So I'll basically tap a button, adjust it, and then take another shot. On this one, all I have to do is hit this button, because I've set it up that way, and I get that feature immediately. On the Sony, I'd have to start drilling into menus to get that. And oftentimes, by the time you're drilling into menus, the shot is completely gone. Not only that, but it is based on Micro Four Thirds, which is the dominant library of these compact lenses. On the Sony side, you have to buy one of the four or five Sony lenses that are available. If you go Micro Four Thirds, there's a huge library of lenses. Just a couple weeks ago, I acquired this really cool fisheye lens that takes immensely satisfying super wide angle shots.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, and also Panasonic also makes this. They've had this for a couple of years now, this really wonderful f1.7 20 millimeter lens that just has such wonderful color and contrast that really I have the zoom lens for it, but I almost never take this lens off of it because it just takes such wonderful pictures.
It's also smaller. It's pancake lens.
So. It's also smaller, right? The problem with the Sony one is that they make the body tiny, tiny, tiny and slim,
lens
for it is the size of a soup can. So you still can't. This I can easily put into a jacket pocket,
right,
or I can put it into like my little like travel bag. With the Sony, you really are stuck carrying it around your neck like Mr. T, or carrying a camera bag for it. And also, they've done simple things like, you know, on this one, standard flash hot shoe, so you can use any standard flash or wireless flash rig that you want. With Sony, for some reason, there's a flash shoe, but they've decided to go for their own special design that's not compatible with anything else. So anyway, it's all about the sweet spot. You will find cameras that might take better pictures under many conditions. Again, the Sony costs $1,500, and for that amount of money, it should take better pictures than this. But if you're looking for something that is small enough that you really want to not only travel with it, as I do, but also, I know I'm going to have 2 hours of free time in the city after my meeting. I think I'll take my camera, maybe spend a couple hours taking some pictures. I don't want to take my SLR with me. This really is the perfect thing. The review of it is going to be up on the Sun Times site this week. And it did hit that coveted distinction of saying, yeah, I got to send this back to Panasonic at the end of this week, but yeah.
Because
I actually went and bought one for myself.
Oh, good.
It's good enough that for the past year and a half, 2 years, I've been sort of not necessarily explicitly budgeting for it, but knowing that my Nikon big SLR is starting to be a little bit long in the tooth, I should probably think about buying the D7000 or the D7100 when it comes out. Now, I'm not saying that I'm never going to buy another SLR, but this one covers so much of what I really need a good camera for that I'm at least going to put it off until the next generation of SLR comes out.
Actually, Trey Ratcliffe supposed that these new mirrorless Micro Four Thirds and other mirrorless formats would replace SLRs, DSLRs. He really thinks the quality is good enough.
I think they're really going to put the hurt on the affordable SLR market. Canon and Nikon both make a whole bunch of really good cameras that cost less than $1,000, but they are as big as an SLR.
Right.
And so for the same amount of money, you get image quality that's just about as good. I don't think that's going to go away, because there's still going to be people who are, when you get above the enthusiast market, even the serious enthusiast market, there are going to be lots of people who are going to need, I need a big beefy frame that I can actually get my hands around really, really easily. I really do need that big full frame sensor. I don't want to have proprietary lenses or proprietary flash unit. So, but yeah, it really is going to put the hurt on any SLR that costs between $500 and $1,000.
Andy took a bunch of pictures with his camera when he was in Dublin. And they're on his Flickr site. Andy I is his handle on Flickr. Yep,
one last thing though is that I forgot to mention. I really want to single it out. One of the nicest things about this, this isn't unique to this model, but it has a really good intelligent auto mode. And the way they've chosen to implement it is really, really nice. Normally, I keep this camera in like some form of program mode so I can choose the ISO, I can choose exposure compensation. But I often get myself into trouble because I've sort of outthought the camera. This has a single button up here for what's called intelligent auto. When I tap it, it's marked in blue. Oh, the focus has been screwed up. But you see the blue glow. That's a button that immediately says override all of my settings. Make every single decision for me that you can, including what scene mode you want to use. I was testing out the other day. There was a steampunk festival in Waltham over the weekend, and so that's what that picture came from. And I was, again, trying to shoot photos of a waterfall. I saw these people coming. I had forgotten what I had set this camera at, but as soon as I simply tapped that one button, immediately went into make all the decisions for me. So not only did it choose the right exposure settings, but it also figured out, oh, I see human faces here, so I'm going to definitely lock the focus just on these human faces and not be distracted by any of the details in the costumes.
Does it think cows are humans, by the way?
It should. You know, they have feelings, they have emotions. You prick them, they bleed.
Cows are people too.
We joke, but that is actually funny. I do enjoy it when I take pictures of, like, sometimes a dog's face. It will say, okay, I see eyes. I see something that might be a nose. Yeah. I'm going to decide that's going to be the focus point. Doesn't always work, but it's often interesting.
I'm going to have to take a look at this GX1. I've seen a few of them in the field, and people seem to really like them. Now I'm interested. Micro Four Thirds is a standard, too, because you can use lenses from other people as well.
Yep.
Thank you, Andy. All right, my pick today is something we saw at NAB as well. In fact, you did the piece with K-Tech. They make the carbon fiber poles that are used by
everybody,
studios everywhere to hold the microphones. But they also make a lightweight pole that you can use to put your iPhone on.
It's awesome.
And shoot a video. Hello, everybody. I'm here on my iPhone recording a video. Now, notice, there's a couple of things I'm going to point out here. First of all, the microphone on the iPhone is also distant. So you and I have been trying to figure out a solution. This is something I've reviewed before, the Apogee mic, which is the only, to my knowledge, digital mic that works with the iPhone.
Apogee also makes a mic interface.
Right.
So you can have
any mic.
It's like a little box, and then you can have any mic pop into it, and then it would pop into the
iPhone. They make a longer cord, which I can't find. If I had the longer cord, what I'm thinking is I'll gaffer tape the mic to this K-Tech tadpole. And then I just...
You can also use like a...
It's going a little too far, isn't it?
The Sennheiser, to go really too far, the Sennheiser wireless mics have a 1/8-inch jack out.
Yeah.
Which
you could just put the analog.
There's a little conversion
that
needs to be done.
I like digital recording, that's all. But the idea of the tadpole is it's very lightweight. It's carbon fiber. These are about $93 for this length, which is a three-segment length. But they have shorter and longer. And
it is so solid.
So, yeah, it's not too heavy. You don't mind holding it.
No.
It's just like a monopod or, it telescopes down to any length that you want to use. Now, a couple of feature items. Let me pull up the website here so I can show you this. It has a ball head, which makes it very easy. This isn't just for the iPhone, by the way. It's for anything that has a 1/4-20
1/4-20
thread, which is a standard tripod thread.
Right.
So you could put a GoPro on it, and I think a lot of people do. $100. Now, what I don't recommend is they also sell an aluminum case, a K-Tech case for the iPhone that has threads on both axes for a standard tripod. Unfortunately, my experience with the case, well, first of all, Apple doesn't sell slide-on cases anymore for fear that the back will get scratched on the iPhone 4S. But also, I couldn't get it off.
Which is funny because my problem was it was so easy to come off, I thought I was going to fall off.
They fixed that, obviously. Evidently. Now it's really hard to get on.
I'll trade you because I want the one that won't come off.
You can have that.
All right. Thank you.
But I have used something else instead, which I actually prefer. And this is, I've mentioned this, I think, before. I certainly did a review on the Gizwiz. This is a Rockform iPhone case. And I really like these cases. They sent me one because they were going to advertise. And then I did a review of it, and they thought, well, we don't have to advertise. Leo just talks about it. So what can I say? But I actually really like it. It's not the most, you know, it's an okay case. This is plastic. I do have to admit I like having this hand strip. But what I really like about it is it has on this back this notched hole, which can be used for a variety of things. I have a knob that's glued to my dashboard in the car. When I get in, the iPhone goes right in the dashboard. That's very nice. They also sell, and these are all sold separately, they also sell a tripod mount that just clicks on the knob. This is a company called Rockform, R-O-K-F-O-R-M. And so I don't have to carry around a case that has tripod mounts on the edges all the time. This is a normal iPhone case, but then I can click in a tripod very easily, mount very easily. And so that's kind of handy. Whoops, I got to tighten this down. And by the way, the other thing that's on this is great. It has a very strong rare earth magnet that goes right into this hole here. So I can actually slap this on the metal and it just stays, which is probably illegal, certainly unhealthy, but very convenient. So the Rockform cases, the prices vary depending on which things you add on to it. But I'm going to say it's certainly cheaper than they do make.
It's like $39 on Amazon.
They do make a luxury aluminum case, which I do not recommend at $300. It looks like it's a gold case. Don't get that one. Just get the cheesy plastic case, the rock bed, which is $39. And then you will want to get the attachment because, you need to get the accessories. They come in all different colors and everything. The attachments are really what make it particularly useful. I love being able to put this on my dash. So there's two tips, really. One is this Tadpole, $93. You will need to modify your iPhone or whatever you're going to use on the Tadpole to make it work. And in this case, I recommend the Rockform case with the tripod.
You know, they have a belt clip slash.
I have all of them.
Bottle opener.
That's the party one. Nice. I have all of those.
Nice.
So you can, I don't clip my phone in my belt. That seems silly, but you're right. You can't open beer with it. So you clip your phone in your belt. You use the magnet. All of these attachments. This is actually kind of a clever idea.
That's a great idea.
Because I hate carrying those ugly cases with the tripod attachments on them. So this is a better solution. And you just carry this thing is. It also rotates, so you can have it in any aspect that you want. The Rockform will mount it in either this way, or you mount it this way, and it will have it on the side like that, which is obviously what you want to do for standard, 16:9 shooting.
Yes, don't shoot the stuff up. Don't shoot it vertically.
Don't shoot portrait. That's crazy talk.
Well, I shot this great video with it. I wasn't really thinking. You know, you're just kind of holding
everybody
your iPhone,
does it
and then suddenly
way.
I was like, oh,
it's portrait.
I screwed the whole thing up.
Portrait. And just to reiterate, I think I picked this before, but this is a great mic, the Apogee mic. It's digital, all digital, which means it plugs into the 30-pin port on the iPhone 4, which requires a digital input and gives you surprisingly good audio.
Yeah.
It's one of the best mics out there for that. Finito. We're done. Thank you, Andy Yanako, for joining us from the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth and the Chicago Sun-Times. You are my own personal hero, Mr. Mutton Chop.
That's not my Christian name, but okay.
He's, you know,
made out to the right.
The last guy still wearing mutton chops except for Ashton Kutcher. That's kind of, it makes you want to change, doesn't it?
It's funny when Ashton Kutcher's in the same sentence twice in the same show. I'm really, really very sad right now, Leo.
Andy, you're the best. Thank you for being here. Thank you, too, to Leander Connie of the Cult of Mac, cultofmac.com. What a great privilege and pleasure to have you on the show. We love
Thank
it
you,
when you're on. Thanks for being here.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
Yeah, come back
I'll
soon.
I'll have mutton chops the next time I come on. Too.
Yeah, will you?
I'm going to grow them out.
I think so. That would be a nice kind of a way to.
If you could glue on mutton chops one time and just.
We should all have mutton chops. Yeah. You know what?
I've only just wanted to fit in.
You know what? That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, just don't tell anybody. One of these days. Alex Lindsay, it's so nice to have you here. I'm sure
so
you're
nice
hitting
to be
here. The road again. Where's your next destination?
The next two Tuesdays, I'll be in London.
Wow.
But I will. I've got three or four streams from there. And the. But I am probably going to do some kind of tweet up.
Good.
While I'm in London. I haven't figured out what day, but I'm there from like, you know, for like 8 or 9 days. And so I'm going to find a day that we can find a bar and drink lots of
stout.
Yes.
Warm beer.
Warm beer.
So anyways, I'll be in London next week. And so hopefully I'll see some of our
Your
listeners.
Your Twitter handle is?
Just Alex Lindsay.
Okay. So people should follow you there to find out.
Follow me. And I'll be tweeting. I'll put it on my G+ page. I'll put it on my Twitter, that kind of thing. Should be fun.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. Please join us for the live show whenever you can. But if you can't, you can always download a copy of audio and video. We make high-quality, medium-quality video available and 63-kilobit MP3 available at our site, twit.tv/MBW, or on iTunes or everywhere else podcasts are found. Our deepest appreciation to Eileen Rivera, who's been the producer of Mac Break Weekly for the last year and a half. She's moving on to work for Molly Wood, and we're very excited for her, but we will miss her. Thank you, Eileen, for doing such
I'll
a great
job. I miss you guys, too. Yep. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I've loved talking or listening to you guys talk Mac.
She will continue to do All About Android every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time, so please tune in for that. So it's really not. We're not losing a producer, we're gaining a show host.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Leo. And thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. I've learned so much behind the board. I never thought I'd run this TriCaster.
Have to do it again.
Who knows? I don't know. Maybe one day I might have
to. Just tell Molly, no live streaming ever. Thank you so much, Eileen. Really appreciate it. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next week. Now get back to work. Break time's over. Wow!